Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we are, the 31st day of December 2012, in the current reckoning. New Year's Eve, here in the Eastern Standard Time Zone, just a little bit short of 6 hours away from closing out this year. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com, a little ongoing experiment in what we call conversation radio. The Horn is available most easily at our website, as noted, where you can just click the Listen Live button and listen merrily along. If that doesn't work for you, however, there are smartphone apps and online apps, things like TuneIn Radio and TuneIn Radio Pro app on your smartphone that'll let you even record the program, Stitcher Radio, yeah, that's another one, Tuner is another one, and then there are other outlets like Dar.fm and Streama.com and Roku devices. Podcasting is available via the subdomain of this show at WhiteRoseSociety.org. The RSS feed address is there. And you can also get the podcast at iTunes. So this is the great big Skyping New Year's Eve program. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Really, this is the Skyping New Year's Eve program. We have, well, on election night, we put Skype to the test pretty merrily. And we're going to put it even further to the test tonight. Because our Horn Malloy Skype chat group has expanded almost exponentially in anticipation of the evening, and it's going to be a real live, honest-to-goodness New Year's Eve party among folks that you know from email, folks that you know from the chat room, folks that you know from the phones, and I think it's going to be really a blast, and we'll find it, because it's always fun to press the technology a little bit as we go. We've been living in the future since we started, right? Yeah. A couple of notes coming in. Robert in Australia, one of those who constantly supports the program each and every month, says, Happy New Year's, Bob and family and all the Horn family. 10 hours into 2013, and it's a lovely day outside. That would be Sydney. How are the fireworks, Robert? I was talking with John Fox, you know, the chief engineer of the Horn and so many of the other things that he is. Keeper of my technical sanity, among others, web designer, webmaster. And I think John was going to be working a gig New Year's Eve that had, it was a prime spot for the festivities down on the, down somewhere around the harbor. And an email rolling in from Randy in Pennsylvania. Fundraising time, Bob. Thank you, Randy. And in point of fact, Randy was ahead of the game. A happy announcement to make. You might recall on Friday, first of all of this happens because it is listener supported. And by listeners, I mean, you know, y'all, not Northrop Grumman, like NPR is listener supported. You can just imagine the head of Northrop Grumman sitting there tuning in Sylvia Pagioli coming in from Rome, right? Come in, Rome. Not me neither. It really is listener supported. It is supported $5 at a time, $100 at a time, in different ways and denominations that make it possible for anybody on earth who wants to hear this to be able to do so. And so you might recall that Don put forward a $100 challenge on Friday evening, and we had not fully met it by the time the show closed. Well, I'm happy to announce that it was met. It was finished off over the weekend by our good friend Dr. Allen, and then this evening begins with a note from John. In a message with the subject line, Tangible Thanks, John writes, I've so enjoyed the Horn community this year. Your words and actions taking on the establishment to eliminate mountaintop removal and the vicious destruction of the environment and population, all of us, not just your neighbors in West Virginia, are truly inspirational. The Horn community is simply incomparable. David's, from San Francisco, presentation of the LIBOR crime Friday night was the clearest I've heard anywhere. I listened to it twice and passed it on to others. The criminality of our banking and corporate culture is simply stunning. David's discussion was just one recent example of the program's quality. I refrain from mentioning any of the other regular callers for fear of neglecting to mention someone. Everyone has something to say that we just wouldn't hear anywhere else. Thank you for convening such an incomparable bunch of independent thinkers and doers. I'm sending a year-end contribution of $100. I'm counting on you to frame this contribution in such a way that we can double it tonight. Thanks again for a great Horn in 2012, and looking forward to continuing it in 2013. Peace, John. Thank you, John. Thank you for all those kind words, and especially for the recognition that this is unique. You'll find out how unique in just a little bit when we bring the New Year's Skype and Eve gang on. It's going to be amazing. Because gathered together, really, I mean, I don't listen to a whole bunch. I used to. I used to listen to everything. But I don't as much anymore because a day is easily eaten up in simply trying to be ready for the evening's program. But I've never heard this take place anywhere. And that's not me blowing smoke. Because it is confirmed time after time after time by folks like John and Don from this past Friday, and Thomas and Robert. And see, I'm going to get into trouble myself because if I start listing names, I'll leave one off, and I don't want anyone feeling left out. Hence, I understand John's motivation in his note. But this is decidedly different. We didn't necessarily know we were going to be creating something so different when Boss Man Wayne determined in the wake of me being run off the terrestrial airwaves because I hurt the precious tender peelings of the mining industry. I don't think we understood, or at least I didn't understand, how unique this would be. And I think it is unique because it has proceeded along evolutionary lines. This has been organic. There has never been a marketing guru involved. There's never been a professional PR outfit involved. This has evolved within its environment and without external pressures. If that makes any sense. And so, so many of you all do, and for all of those who do recognize and help to keep it going, please understand, you keep it going for those who cannot participate financially, but certainly do participate in many other ways. And as I've always said, the single most profound participation is the participation of time. And this is an evening, of course, when we measure or pay close attention to some approximation of time. It is the one thing we were born never having any more of. It's one of those reasons that I cringe a little bit when I hear somebody say, well, when I get time, I'll fill in the blank. There isn't any. There isn't any. And so the sharing of time within this little community is precious indeed. And this is more than any other holiday. I don't even like the word holiday, because of its religious connotations. But any more than any other special day that we mark on the calendar, New Year's Eve is about time. Now, I think I griped a little bit last week that I think we need a better New Year's Day than this. I mean, really? Compelling the entire, well, not the entire world, the Muslim and the Muslim calendar and the Jewish calendar, and I think certain Asian calendars, well, you know, they don't use January 1st. But the Western world, shall we say, and the world that Europe imposed itself upon, are compelled to mark a new revolution around the sun by remembering the day that little baby Jesus got his foreskin chewed off. Really? No kidding. New Year's Day is the eighth day. That's when 2,000 years ago, you went and got your foreskin chewed off if you were a newborn male of the tribe. And that is why New Year's Day is New Year's Day. As noted last week, the Romans celebrated New Year's on the first day of the month of the month named for the god of war, Mars, when the weather would be turning nice enough to go and slaughter and subjugate other people. You know, you get the plant, you get the crops in the ground, and then you march away to war and you subjugate some other misbegotten tribe on the Italian peninsula, and then you march right back home and gather in your crops and have your celebration, and next thing you know, it's Saturnalia, and right. I mean, if we want to celebrate New Year's in the middle of bad weather, let's just all make it, you know, the solstice, something everybody can agree happens at the same time. Me, I like the vernal equinox. Calendrics is a fascinating study, and it's moments like this that I wish we had. We've got semi-official horn experts in a number of fields. We need a horn astronomer. We really, really do. But I'm getting ahead of myself. So there it stands. John, with $100 on the table, hoping it will be met by 100 more. And now this has turned into sort of a poker game. because Darlene responded to John, and she said, "Bob, I'd like to do the same as John. Feel free to use this as another $100 challenge. Go for it! Or to match John's challenge if you like. Thank you for another great year of conversation radio." Signed, Darlene. So there you have it. Darlene said, "John, I'll see your 100 and raise you one." So there's still $100 to be matched out there. Darlene matched John's, and now Darlene is looking for somebody to match hers. 10 at 100, 5 at 20, 2, 4 at 25, 2 at 50, 33 at 3, and all the various and sundry permutations that make the lottery so much fun to play and so hard to predict. What I said a few minutes ago about the horn not having any professional PR. Texas Betsy, Riley and Dryly says, "Professional PR? Ha! Huh? Quite the opposite." Yeah, and she confirms, "Bob, Jewish baby boys still have their bris on the eighth day of life. Lucas did." Yes, absolutely. And so, New Year's is a celebration of Yeshua, and my Hebrew is sketchy here, would he be Yeshua Bar Yusuf? Of his bris. After which, I guess, there was a hasty donkey and or camel sprint down into Egypt. Ah, it is Yeshua Bar Yusuf. The John son of Thomas of its era and region. Fairly common names, both. But I'm a little bit geeky and a little bit weird, because I was thinking about, oh Lord, how much more pretentious can you get than this? I was thinking about the universe today. He said in his best Ted Knight voice. I was thinking about the position of the Earth in the universe. Because it's all moving. It's all moving. The Earth is, yeah, we're wobbling along through the universe. We try to use scientific terms to describe it, but the poles themselves spin. The axis, the Earth turns on its axis and wobbles back and forth, and then the whole shebang revolves around the sun. But the sun's moving too. The sun's moving relative to the galaxy. And the galaxy's moving relative to the universe. And God only knows what the universe is doing. Well, not God. But you get the idea. I'm sure some smart physicist, astrophysicist, mathematician, what have you, somewhere, has figured out how long it takes for the Earth to return to the same spot in any given amount of time. And I'm pretty sure it does not fit into the lifespan or perhaps even the existence of humans on the planet. We may not have come back to the same place since the dinosaurs were around. And yet we ourselves celebrate New Year's by many of us going and getting very unprofessionally liquored up. This is, among my hardcore drinking pals, referred to as amateur night. "Well, how old are you, man?" "Well, I thought you have beautiful feet." You know, that kind of thing. But we celebrate the wobbling of the Earth by wobbling ourselves, I suppose. But it's a very geocentric holiday, isn't it? We act like we are we kind of are the only ones who measure this sort of thing. But it's worth thinking about what New Year's exactly means. It's about it is a human construct, and about as arbitrary as one can get. Because it would still be arbitrary if we were doing it on the vernal equinox, or on the summer solstice or the winter solstice, or on the autumnal equinox, or on the day that little baby Yeshua Bar Yusuf got his foreskin chewed off. Can't tell me that the little baby boy doesn't feel that. You just can't. From the Cultural History Department, Texas Betsy lets us know names are still done that way, Yeshua Bar Yusuf, but with Ben for a boy instead of Bar, Hebrew instead of Aramaic. I'll be darned, that's what the difference is. The phrase Bar Mitzvah is the Aramaic son of the commandments. She says, yet more info than you asked for. Not really. There's never such thing as too much info in this little community. And I didn't even know Bar Mitzvah meant son of the commandments. I wonder if there was a similar linguistic evolution that wound up with the Arabic bin, B-I-N. I don't know. Robert says, I haven't been to watch the fireworks in Sydney for a number of years. Access to the Sydney Harbour foreshore is somewhat limited, and when you get a million people or so trying to access it all at the same time, it does get somewhat crowded. Tonight's opening understatement is brought to you by Robert in Sydney. The organizers worked this out a decade or two back and set up two shows, one at 9 p.m. for families who can then head home, and one at midnight for the adults. Even so, it's awfully crowded. I'm about 13 kilometers, 8 miles from the harbor, but I could hear the 9 p.m. show quite clearly. I was in bed asleep by 11 p.m., so didn't hear the midnight show. If you've ever seen the photos or videos of the show, it was as spectacular as ever. And they are among the most spectacular on the planet. Someday. You know, my birthday rolls around in January, and I was just thinking the other day, I was thinking a little bit ago, one of these days I would love to, for anybody whose birthday is in the cold weather winter months, who lives where cold weather and winter come, it's always kind of a downer, because you're stuck inside on your birthday when you're a kid. So one of these days, and we don't have any warm weather month people in our house. My father was November. Ferg is the day after Christmas. Lorelei and I are late January. Margie is early February. And Doodle is late March. And the closest we get to warm weather is Agnes, who very nearly shares a birthday with Adolf Hitler and Mao Zedong. We understand why things run around here the way they do now, don't we? But one of these days, it would be fun to be south of the equator and celebrate a birthday. I don't know, in shorts, outside, in the warm, preferably with a drink in hand that was in a coconut shell with a little umbrella and a sword-speared fruit sitting in it. The universe. Ain't it fun? Ain't it grand? But one thing apparently we do know this evening. And that is that, well, we're going over the gently sloping fiscal incline that is such a moderate slope as to not even necessarily get a skateboard going real good. Everybody watched as President Not Sure assembled a group of regular Americans to stand behind him as he came out to the podium and said that we were all waiting around. We were very close to a deal, and the deal we were apparently close to was something less than inspiring. Bless Senator Tom Harkin's heart for pointing it out. And just that one, showing his face on the television, was apparently enough to piss off the Republican Party, the Lord of the Flies crowd in the House of Representatives, such that it was announced later in the day, oh, by God, there won't be any damn vote today. We're going to go get drunk. At which point, by that time, House Speaker John Boehner probably had his straw in a straight-up Jeroboam of Merlot. Well, I don't see us having a vote today. Hand me a tarot, man. I was ready to ring in the new year. Well, we need some fiscal responsibility around here. Oh, well, thank you. Thank you for the reminder, Benedict, in the chat room. Benny, remember, Bob, when you're south of the equator, you have to learn to stir your drinks backwards. I plan on having my drinks stirred for me, by God. Well, actually, by a bartender. Nor do I, Benedict noting, I haven't even the slightest interest in this fiscal cliff crap. Beth posted an article to my Facebook page earlier today, or maybe it was yesterday, that I read with some fascination because she said every time I read one of these articles, I wonder that they haven't taken Paul Craig Roberts out with a drone strike yet. And I think that was just half in jest. Writing at his own website, paulcraigroberts.org, the Paul Craig Roberts Institute for Political Economy, he wrote, and this is worth paying attention to, the fiscal cliff is another hoax designed to shift the attention of policymakers, the media, and the attentive public, if any. I like that, if any part. Come on, we're attentive. Don't sell us all short, Paul Craig Roberts. From huge problems to small ones. The fiscal cliff is automatic spending cuts and tax increases in order to reduce the deficit by an insignificant amount over 10 years if Congress takes no action itself to cut spending and to raise taxes. In other words, the fiscal cliff is going to happen either way. The problem from the standpoint of conventional economics with the fiscal cliff is that it amounts to a double-barreled dose of austerity delivered to a faulting and recessionary economy. Ever since John Maynard Keynes, most economists have understood that austerity is not the answer to recession or depression. Agreed. And yet, at the same time, and this kind of goes to show you the way the right-wing mind, hive mind, works. I was directed to a graphic earlier today that was posted in the Beer Party of South Carolina page. And it was truly a graphic because it involved, oddly enough, a graph. And the graph was of wage stagnation of the working class. 1947 to 1979, pay rose with productivity. In 1980, the Great Recession began. And that would be 32 years now. Oddly enough, 47 to 79 is also 32 years. The Great Prosperity, 1947 to 79, pay rose with productivity. The Great Regression, 1980 to now, and then it didn't. And it's pretty easy to see if anyone has any even marginal ability to understand a graph. And remember, this is the Beer Party of South Carolina. The Beer Party is a little informal group of folks who were kind of pushing back at the idea of a tea party. I think it's the Beer Party because no one can ever be accused of being a beer bagger. But down in the comments on this graph, a statement: the ignorance of the communist left is tragic. The minute you see the words communist and left together in regard to any sort of political grouping in the United States, you know that you're dealing with somebody who hallucinates most of his enemies. Increasing tax rates won't tackle the real fiscal cliff, the national debt. There are inflationary pressures coming about from all the spending by the right and left that is going to completely impoverish the working class. Okay. Now, what you got to understand with a comment like this is that this person merely saw the title and started typing. Because there's nothing about taxation that makes this graph behave the way that it does. This is simply a matter of workers being appropriately remunerated for their labor. Redistributing wealth of individuals through the filter of greedy politicians and their crony capitalist buddies is going to result in an even poorer civilian working class. The hell does that mean? Because remember, this is a comment that begins, the ignorance of the communist left is tragic. This guy thinks that the Democratic Party of the United States is communist. Really? Which means, in turn, that this goober has never even... Well, he's more likely to equate the last name Marx with Groucho than with Karl. Let's just put it that way. It was just, Benedict, it was just written by a goober. Benedict pointing out, this is what the Chicken Little monetarists have been screaming for three decades. I think they've probably been screaming it for longer if you go and look at the whiny petulance of something like, say, anything by Ayn Rand, but particularly Atlas Scratched Himself or whatever it is. And that's what it is. It's not Atlas Shrugged. Atlas scratches himself inappropriately. But regardless of that, it is noteworthy the response outside of somebody like Tom Harkin that this problem has engendered. You know, Tom Harkin just called BS on the lot of it today and said, you know, let's ride down the slope. On the other hand, the for-profit media were almost all a titter today, with fiscal cliff's graphics and fiscal cliff fonts and fiscal cliff theme music. And in the height of silliness, my junior senator, Joe Manchin, finally got somebody to pay attention to him by getting himself a gig that was about a minute and a half on CNN, wherein he said his solution to the problem was to extend basically the phase out of the Bush tax cuts over 3 years. Oh, isn't he clever, my junior senator? He couched it in terms of giving working families a break, but he neglected to say that the people the Bush tax cuts were intended to really help or enrich, if not, I mean, help is a relative term, that the people the Bush tax cuts were intended to enrich would also continue to slowly, gradually get their tax increase phased in. But of course, 3 years from now means we would be in the heat of another political free-for-all, such as like what we've got over with just a month or so ago, which means that no one would have the will to leave that, you know, and we'd have to talk about the impoverishment of our poor rich in the midst of another silly season. Ron and Raleigh writing in, "By God, Bob, you know the cause of the problem. It's those dad-blame unions. People being paid too damn much. P.S. I'll bet that graph shows the start of the wage stagnation begins after the wage and price controls instituted by Dick Nixon." Productivity just goes right up, 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 up. But, yeah, it's pretty close. It's pretty close. You're right. Sharp one, that, Ron. Randy pointing out, everybody who watches Fox News knows, that's tough even on a professional reader. Everybody who watches Fox News knows that Sweden is a communist country because they are democratic socialist. Yeah. Ron asking, hey Bob, do you remember Simon Bar Sinister, the villain of the old Underdog cartoon? Those writers always had subtle subtext that kids didn't understand. Yeah, some of that was written for the smart folks. That's why I find cartoons so handy. So we are only a matter of minutes away from beginning the New Year's Skype and Eve. A little bit of a reminder on that. The way this is going to work, if you are used to Skyping into the program, don't tonight. Because this is going to take up the Skype account. But also another reminder, you can get into the program simply by dialing in on the regular phones. You know, 304-658-3333, that's what makes this all work so well. We're going to go through the end of the normal show. I'm sure the Skype chat will continue after that. But I do have to leave at the end of the show because the social butterfly of the family, Ferg, has an event to attend, you see. And so I'm not letting any amateurs, this is amateur night, I'm not going to let any amateur, you know, young drivers, no. So I'm going to take him to and pick him up from. And we'll see where it all goes after midnight or so, depending on how things shake out. Note from Robert. Subject line, the Mayans and the fiscal cliff. So the Mayans were right, only they didn't have the words for fiscal cliff. Oh, I don't know. I think anybody who can build a pyramid the size of what's at Chichen Itza could probably figure out. Right. And before we do jump over to the Skyping New Year's Eve festivities, a reminder that we have a $100 challenge on the table from Darlene, who met John's $100 challenge and has issued her own, hoping to get us out of the month of December and hopefully started into the month of January on a good foot. So the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, as is the snail mail address. But I need to address something before we go to the Skype and New Year's Eve, and that is a technical issue. I have gotten a number of, and have passed along to Ben and to John, a number of words from folks about warnings they're getting at the website. And as far as we can tell, and by we, I mean John and Ben, because I'm technically illiterate on this. The warnings that are coming up are specious, because there is really, I mean, the site has been scanned and rescanned and different means of testing everything about the site have been run, and there's nothing, there's no external malware or anything on there. So one of the things is happening. Something in the software itself is causing a glitch, or because they're such cute and clever little lizard brains, some right-wingers are persistently reporting the website as hazardous. So with that in mind, if you have a difficulty getting to the headonradionetwork.com website, if you want to do a contribution and help meet Darlene's challenge, you can always use just the email address, because the email address is tied to my email address. It's bobkincaid@gmail.com. If you just put that into your PayPal, into the field on the PayPal, on your PayPal page, it'll be a Horn contribution. And you will have the option of selecting personal and gift. That's not saying you're giving a gift to me. No, you're not. But what it does, for those of you who object to the transfer fees, it means that there are no transfer fees. See? Yeah. Neat. And so if Darlene's challenge is met, we may actually get close to meeting the old $2,500 monthly goal, which would be a good thing indeed. So let's see what's going on here. Let's see if it works. We are connected for the Skyping New Year's Eve on the Horn. Hey, everybody.
Hey, Bob.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Bob.
Good evening. I'll take my 2 minutes over Zymos, Bob.
Happy New Year, Bob.
Thank you. Thank you, one and all, and to the rest of the Horn family as well. For some reason, we've got an echo going.
Yep.
Anybody want
to
take a run at
who it is?
It should not be me.
It sounds like it's you.
Yeah.
Hey, Bob, were you echoing?
I guess I am.
I seem to be all right now.
Okay, yeah, maybe Skype had to catch it and get it all settled down.
This is a work in progress.
Well, it's a matter of dancing out on the razor's edge of technology, and whether we like it or not, sometimes we get our little feet cut. But no, it seems to have gone away. Let me congratulate everyone on the quality of their audio. Let's see. Just to let folks out there who are listening and not looking at the screen I'm seeing, let me just tell folks who's in the room. We have Susan, we have Sergi, we have Don, Fritz, we have Harry, we have Tim from L.A., we have Kim, Michael, Duncan, otherwise known as Sparky, we have Jug a Punch, Thomas, we have Will, we have Grant, we have Roger, we have Larry and Jeff and Steve. We have Gigi Mommy, known and loved by all from the Malloy and Horn chat rooms. We have Sandra, we have Kevin, and we have Cowgirl. And wow, what a wonderful gathering! Happy New Year's to you all. Shall we? Where do we want this to go? Don't everybody clam up at once.
No, I didn't get a volunteer to speak first.
So, I think I already took care of that.
Oh, I think if I should, before Bob, everybody gets carried away, I want to give a shout out to somebody that's just listening. Is Maine Coyote.
Ooh.
She doesn't show up on your. I mean, she's just in the chat room in the Skype.
Oh, okay.
And listening on the stream. She's busy with family stuff.
I understand.
Lobster pie.
Lobster pie?
Yeah.
Oh, is this the food porn portion of the program?
I was hoping Lottie would show up, but he told me he was busy, too, with food preps.
If I may ask, what on earth is lobster pie?
That may be a question that only that only Maine Coyote can answer.
We used to make it in Washington State, too.
Well, then, by all means, dish.
Well, it's like the same thing that, you know, when you make a mincemeat pie or a shrimp pie. Lobster's just the main ingredient.
Okay, that works for me. It sounds yummy enough.
Yeah, that works.
Yeah, here we
go. Too bad we weren't all close enough. We could just butcher a cow and we could have steak.
Hot diggity. are
one of your cows?
Yeah.
And speaking at present is Cowgirl. Is it okay if we go ahead and give the name that other people know you by?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, Patty. Okay. So, awesome. Patty's up in North Dakota and with a family of people and cattle. And do y'all do like a traditional Christmas standing rib or something? Or, you know, being beef people, do you have a bird on Christmas, Patty?
We're not allowed to have bird in the house. So, yeah, we have to do steak or a rib or something like that. And then we sneak little stuff besides seafood stuff. So.
Oh, yum. Yum. Let's see. Betsy wants me to, she says, can you tell people to add me or Duncan to Skype so they can get to the conversation? I'm Texas.Betsy and he is Sparky Dunk. So, yeah, that's taken care of. And, okay, it's about to get more interesting. Let's bring in a landline call. Hey, welcome to the program.
Happy New Year, Brother Bob. Happy New Year, Horn family. How is everyone?
I will, I'll let the room answer.
Hi,
we're
sweetheart.
All doing great.
It's Brother Albert.
Hey.
Happy congratulations. New Year to you.
Happy New Year,
Albert.
Yeah, thank you.
Hello, Canada. Let's talk with Zymos.
How's the youngins?
Oh, he's just great. He's growing. He's grown a pound, 2 ounces already. Just growing and growing. It's just happening quick.
I saw photos for the first time just before showtime. What a handsome little guy he is.
I just want to eat his little face. But yeah, and he's doing. Mama's doing good, and he's doing good, and. He just, you know, he eats, sleeps 4 hours, gets up, you know, does his little duty, has to get changed, gets a little feed, goes to sleep. It's just, yeah, he's just a good little baby. He's real cute. No stresses on this one. So.
Awesome. So, are you and Renee getting any sleep?
Yeah, well, I don't know, I mean, you know, I jumped out, yeah, because, of course, I get sleep. More, I'll be honest, you know, with not having twins and, you know, I don't have mammary glands, you know, that's what I offer. The offer's always on the table if you want me to get up and change them. But she says, well, I got to feed them anyway, so I get a little more sleep than she has. But she's a trooper. I just do all the cooking. I make sure she's got plenty of food, plenty of fuel, you know, teas, waters, and all kinds of stuff. You know, sits, baths, we've been doing that. That's a good little thing. You know, we didn't get to do that with the girls. We, the midwife that we went to, which I also recommend that. If you can do a midwife, go to midwife, do a home birth. Such a surreal experience. It's just, you know, it's just brilliant. It's the way it should be. And, you know, I've heard, you know, the people say that, you know, when they do that, babies are a little bit more calm. And he's real calm, relaxed, and, yeah, so it seemed good for the baby. It was good for Mama. And the midwife gave us a sitz bath with chamomile flowers and lavender flowers. He sits in there. You know, that's almost like, you know, that's a guaranteed 5-hour nap. So, yeah, but it's been great. And I really appreciate it.
Well, I tell you what, you've had a lot of well wishes going your way since you called in and we all got to hear Lito. Sort of offer up his first little comment to the horn. I think Philip wrote in, Albert, and said that he listened 3 or 4 times and was just charmed.
Oh, well, thank you. He's my little beauty. He'll sneeze and go, he does like a,
How are the girls responding, Albert?
You know, they, Not so bad with the, you think they'd be jealous. I guess they were there. You always wonder about that, if the kid, is going to feel left out and are you going to love me as much. But they're a little bit older. And they really, they love him too much almost. They love him so much, they're so careful around him. And they're like, oh, don't wake him. And they've been excellent. And they've been little helps. And they've been everything I hoped they could be and more. So... now they know how much we love them a little bit because they were there for it and they got to share in that experience. And that's kind of what I want for my son, to have big sisters that really, really love him like that. That'll be helpful in his life, we always can use more support, right? The bigger support that we have, usually the better off we are. So that's what I'm hoping for them. But, yeah, it's great. It's beautiful. It's a sweet, sweet thing. Again, no complaints here. I hope everybody's going to... I hope we have a real good year coming up. It's been a little aggravating and stressful. And they never stop, right? What are they crying about now, these poached egg repiglicans? God, these guys. 10 seconds. 10 seconds, right? You put an egg in the water for 10... It's not even boiling. It's lukewarm kind of egg, yeah.
And it starts to whine.
Oh, God. He said mean things. Mean kid, I don't like you. That's what my girls used to say back in when they were 4. Don't like you, mean kid. Shut up. Hey, for real, it's so annoying. They're such, such bullies. Oh, I can't even stomach. I'm enjoying my life too much to get too deep into it. But man, oh, they're filthy. Oh man. Ugh. But I got some other good news in terms of the pizzeria, if anybody wants to.
Oh, yes, please.
Yeah, it might incorporate a move on our part, but I'm ready for that. I'm ready for a move. It would be out to Oconomowoc. Found a place where, man, the kitchen, this is why, the kitchen's done, pretty much. It's got the vent hood, it's got, giant, I don't even know, it's 128-inch true pizza table. The true with the 4 fridge. It's huge. It's something I wouldn't even have purchased on my own. I would have been more than happy with the 2 table one. That's 10 times the counter space I have now. With 60 inches. So, but anyway, it's all this got the vent. The vent is the part that scares me. What?
Oh, let me turn this off. Happy New Year.
Hey, Happy New Year.
Happy Christmas and all those things.
Jeffrey's calling from Holland. I just brought him in. Sorry.
Yeah, hey,
that.
Jeffrey.
Hi, guys.
So, New Year has already come for you, right?
Yes, it's already. We just missed each other. Happy New Year. And we're okay right now. We're taking it easy.
Good.
I'm just chilling,
Yeah. So is Scott from Sweden also in the group here?
Yeah, det gör jag.
Mute your mic, Jeffrey.
Yeah?
Mute your mic or I have to take you out.
Hey, it sounds like there's fun to be had in the Netherlands. Yeah, happy new year,
Jeffrey's
Scott.
Girlfriend has a little girl.
Okay, well, this is, you said a move, Albert? Do you mean like pick up the family and move from the house too, or is this like a commute?
Yeah, this is out by Milwaukee, so.
Oh.
Yeah, it's an opportunity that I'm kind of looking forward to, at least attempting. Just has all the, it just has all the pieces right there. It's obvious the people aren't doing it right. It's like they have a double decker. They have all the equipment. This is the thing. They have all the equipment. None of the passion to do it. They have a double decker, those double decker conveyor belt ovens. Now, anybody who's a pizza aficionado knows that you don't really get a good pie out of those things.
No. Those are for mass produced, Soylent pie.
Yeah, Soylent pie, perfect. and I'm not saying, but the other thing is they're hideously expensive. Those pieces, I just did like a little quick research up on them. The double decker that they had, that's $36,000 in equipment. just for an oven. Yeah, and so obviously the person's in debt, and you know, basically the price is to buy them out. So that's kind of what we're sort of looking at, and we'll get more details after the new year. But if that's the case, you know, it's so tough to pass up. I don't know how you pass up anything. You know, those venting, those grease hoods that you have to have in restaurants.
Yeah,
that's scary expensive to get that stuff done.
Well, that comes with a fire extinguisher, the fire system, and everything, right?
Yeah, they're bucks. So, yeah, if we could do that, you know, plus we'd be closer to our other friends who, you know, also a few days after Leto was born, they had their first son, and they had been trying for a while, and, you know, it came to be, I think, for them on the 14th. So, you know, it was funny, you know, Leto was on the 11th, as Theron, that's their son, was on the 14th. So they're about 2 days apart. They were 2 days off their due date, and I knew I got Renee before he got her, so...
What a way to talk.
Well, I didn't want to discourage him because it was his first news, you know, and I kind of had it, and I didn't want to rain on his parade when he told me about it, so I let him wait. I'm like, well, don't be surprised if I call you back and, you know, I let you know the same thing in the future here, you know, and I just kind of left it at that because they were so excited. They were trying guys for almost 10 years.
Oh, know? Wow.
Yeah, so I was really, it was really happy for them. And then we got to do the, you know, both pregnant at the same time. It was just a really good experience for that. And so, yeah, you know, if we can get closer to friends like that, why wouldn't you? I mean, they're like family, you know. It'd be, you know, if I had the opportunity in West Virginia, if you provided coal filter gas masks, you know, I might think about it.
Well, you know, Joe Manchin does say that we're open for business.
Oh, open business.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
He's such a thinker, Joe is.
Yeah, Manchin. And, I guess I've seen him grow up because of you. He really has grown into a hideous little serpent, hasn't he? Oh. I mean, you've known it for years, Brother Bob, but... Oh, and he's just blossom. You know, he's like the West Virginia Dianne Feinstein. That's what he's like.
No, I don't know. The California contingent may have something to say about that.
Come on, guys. Dianne's a... She's got fangs. As Joe Biafra said, the dragon lady. When he ran against her for mayor of San Francisco. You know, he kind of pinned it on her. I'm not saying I hate her. I'm just saying...
She's got fangs.
I'm just saying, if there was a bowl of fruit in the room and I heard she was around, I wouldn't just reach in for an apple. You know what I mean?
But, whereas Joe's more like what Juanita was talking about the other night when she was talking about that coral snake getting loose in her neighborhood. She said, you know, they don't have fangs per se; they're just extremely poisonous and they chew on you for a while.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Manchin. We just ugh. Ugh. What was that video? I remember you guys confronted him in the Capitol building.
No,
he was ignoring.
Some of the assault on Granny started under his gubernatorial administration. He had a wheelchair bound grandmother dragged out in handcuffs.
Yeah.
Nice,
mm-hmm.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. 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 Good little minion. Yeah, he reminds me of my governor over here.
Oh, Scott.
Yeah, he's like a Scotty. He's a Scott model. I'd like to hopefully this new year. I don't know. You guys probably ain't gonna do nothing with him because he's deep. That guy's infected deep into West Virginia, right?
He's.
You got him for a while, Brother Bob. Sorry.
Yeah, and probably another term or so, and he'll be the senior senator from West Virginia.
Oh, no.
If that doesn't just fill you with a sense of creeping dread. Yeah,
he's going to be one of those with liver spots and a wheelchair and a neck brace. Bringing him out of the field. You know what I mean? Just holding him up.
You all can just call me Strom.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, goodness. Oh, goodness. Oh, goodness. Well, 2013, let's get it done. We're going over this cliff. We have to, right? Right? We just have to. We can't let them keep... Because they're going to do it again and again and again.
Right. I mean, is there anybody in the group here that thinks that it's, you know, some sort of Mayan apocalypse to to go down the gently sloping incline? I mean, Sandra, you've probably opined on this more than any, you know, with more authority than anybody else.
What's the question?
Oh, just, you know, the decision of the right wing to take us so-called over the cliff.
No, I mean, it just happened over and over again. I mean, the thing that's killing me is the fact that Obama put Social Security up, and of course they're going to nibble at it because it brings that into the discussion of the deficit from now on. He's an idiot. Sorry.
No, I think your estimation is correct, and you know, but bless Tom Harkin's heart, you know, from Iowa, for pointing out that this was all just a bunch of hogwash, anyway. And there was a report earlier in the day that that Sherrod Brown and Al Franken and some other arguably more progressive senators had marched into Harry Reid's office hollering, "Oh hell no."
Good. So, I mean, if you go by the precious market, I mean, that all finished up from what I can tell. I mean, the joke is on us, you know, for even buying into this crap. But I just think it's unfortunate because all we have to go on is that Obama won't be dealing with them over the debt ceiling. Does anyone believe that? I'm open to persuasion.
I wouldn't try to convince you otherwise.
Sparky.
Didn't I hear we were going over the debt cliff already at midnight?
Well, they're still talking about, you know, people going to and fro from the Hill. So, you know, the House adjourned, but Biden is around. I mean, it just sounds really, yeah, I don't know. They haven't closed it down yet, from what I can tell.
I saw a tweet from somebody in CNBC on breaking news that said there was going to be no vote in the House.
No
tonight.
Vote. Oh, okay. Because I just looked and it said some other madness. So I guess you're the final word.
Well, they started. Yeah, they started saying no vote around 4 o'clock. But technically, the new Congress doesn't come in until the 3rd. Do I have that right?
Fourth. What I heard.
So some of this December 31st business was a kind of Mayan apocalypse redux.
Well, what's happening with the milk?
Yeah, and that's because no farm bill. So with no farm bill, it goes back to the price supports of 1949.
Actually, we averted going over the milk cliff just a few hours ago. I heard they rammed a farm bill through at the last minute, so the milk cliff is averted.
Jesus, is that what it's going to be, Sergi? Is it all cliffs from here on out? We had a milk cliff.
I would be afraid so. It's going to be the new compound word.
Butter. Well, the security state cliff happen because they can still spy on us without any protection. So I guess that cliff, I guess we've gone over that, the Fourth Amendment cliff.
Yeah, well, the Fourth Amendment cliff was almost no cliff at all, Sandra.
Okay, well,
I mean, there's not much cliff. I mean, that's like I don't know, going over the Fourth Amendment crack in the pavement.
Can you hear me okay, Bob?
Yeah, I got you. Kevin?
I just wonder when these right-wing nut Republicans are going to piss the president off enough that he just says no. Because I heard his speech this afternoon. It was pretty innocuous. And then they're all upset. I think it was McConnell that said, no, it was McCain that said that the president's speech today was confrontational to the Republicans.
What, did he show his black face? I mean, don't take
much. Apparently, yeah.
That's exactly where I was going, Sandra, but I'm so much happier you went there first.
You know,
it just...
How dare he.
And for him to put Social Security and Medicare on the table just really upsets me, of course, because I'm dependent on him. But... You know, to do that to millions of Americans who are dependent upon that just leaves me with such a sense of, what did I work on the campaign for? I know why I voted for him, because I didn't want Romney, but that's the only reason, positive reason, that I can find that my vote did in this last election.
I don't know what he was doing, because a few weeks ago he said, well, you guys can't seem to get past me. And then today he comes out and he taunts him a bit. So, I mean, maybe he don't give a F. Maybe he's down to that point, finally.
I really would hope so, because he's got to show some backbone in dealing with these idiots. And waiting for the new Congress to come in, I think, is step one. And maybe with that new Congress, we might be able to actually get some things done.
Well, Kevin, I was hearing that the fiscal cliff concept was the United States name for otherwise known as austerity in Europe. And that's what that means. So if you get the austerity concept in other countries, you've gotten the fiscal cliff.
But Larry, wasn't there as much or more austerity in the deals being put forward than there is in the cliff itself?
I'd agree.
And just to let folks know, there is this is the great big New Year's Eve Horn New Year's Skypin' Eve mass gaggle, and I don't think gaggle's the right word, but it's a big group wide conversation, the likes of which is not going to be happening just about anywhere else, God knows, on terrestrial radio. And I got a feeling the group's going to get bigger, because I just cleared in a whole bunch more friend requests. Chris, also known in the chat room as Blue Ape, needs to Chris, you need to friend up with Sparky Dunk on Skype, and Sparky will get you right in the door. So let's see. My goodness, people are adding so fast I can't keep up with them. Cassie, are you still in the room? No. Or yes. Let me ask a quick question, because Scott is in the room out in Sweden. New Year's has come and gone. Is it Happy New Year yet?
Oh yeah, we got New Year. It sounded like a firefight out there. Everybody is a tradition here. People buy skyrockets at almost professional class, and so I spent the evening just holding my little dog's paw, keeping it from freaking out. But yeah, we're in the future. We're in 2013. There are times I'm waiting for the U.S. to catch up with the 20th century, but we're in the future.
Yeah, we're in what the astronomers would call retrograde motion, I think.
Oh God, that's the truth.
I want to go back to the future.
No, it's always freaky watching the U.S. from abroad. And, you know, I have this deepening love-hate relationship with it. I've been here now since 1983, when the woman I met in Kansas said, "Yeah, we'll live together. I won't live here." We were in Kansas at the time, so bugged out.
Yeah, and by here, she didn't mean Kansas. She meant the United States, right, Scott?
Both.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
But it seems to have worked out for you.
Oh, for me, it's great. I just wish I can pirate out half of the people I know in the States, just so they can... Or that the people would react and try to bring real change about, but it seems like there's a small minority, the Hornies and a few others, who want so desperately to have something better, and it's just so much inertia that has to be overcome, and it's just so frustrating to see the states languish and even going backwards downhill back to the 1880s. And
well, Scott, to be fair, I think it's an honest question as to whether it's inertia or a force in the opposite direction. Because
I think it's both. But don't you think people are kind of like, you can only fight City Hall so long, you know, or people try, they petition, you try something, maybe the 60s, I'm too close to it, and I've grown up in it, but I think, there was a chance for change, and it was bashed down during the Reagan years. And I think a lot of people just never recovered the older, the gray-haired set, that is. Or am I projecting?
Can I ask something?
Yeah, please. I've always wanted to speak with you, Sandra.
Oh. Well, if you look at the recent story with the Occupy, my God, you had the FBI meeting with the banks to suppress Occupy. And that's just straight up fascism. I mean, there is no other word for it. And they were ready to get Occupy even before the first tent went up. I mean, it's pretty extensive, the repression now. I don't really think people should fool themselves about, what we're up against and where we're living.
Yeah, that's kind of what I mean. Is this that by, well, that's kind of what I included in the word inertia. It's that not only do you have to raise consciousness, but you have to fight the biggest city hall there ever was.
Well, and you know, if I could take a moment for a little bit of some of that non-professional PR that we're so very good at that Betsy was remarking on earlier. Sandra, weren't we talking about the fact that the banks were colluding with the feds back when they were colluding with the feds to go in and break knees and shoot canisters into people's heads? During Occupy,
remember that story I sent you where there's a picture of the police with the bank logos in this control room? I don't make me sound like a tin hat freak, but that was just scary. And that was right in the middle of it, courtesy of Russia Today.
Wasn't there that other story about, who was it, J.P. Morgan Chase or Goldman Sachs or maybe both of them or all of them, giving some horse-gagging wad of charity money to the NYPD?
Right. And you had their logo commingle with the NYPD Mussolini style. I mean, it's crazy. It was really, I was scared.
Well, and at what point in time, if I may verge off into my passion for ancient history, do we stop referring to the law enforcement structures as law enforcement and just start calling them lictors? Yeah, because, you know, when you became the emperor, you could have as many lictors as you want, and you just hired them in, and they were just knee breakers. You know, in the pay of empire and the money that ran empire.
Bob, wasn't that also the case in the 1880s, Pinkerton?
Sure.
But I mean, that's kind of what when I refer back to the 1880s and 1890s. It's just, we're reverting to that stage.
Well, it's empire.
There was guns for hire, police for hire. There wasn't much difference between the two.
Well, except you have the element of the massive surveillance capability. That adds a new wrinkle to it. Kind of.
Well, they had good surveillance then, too, because spy networks. But yeah, you're right. It's not more automated.
Yeah.
But you know, the larger point, I think, is that this is the... And I got myself into a little bit of a discussion on my Facebook page over the weekend with Mike, one of many Mikes, not Malloy, about what is the nature of empire and what does it mean to recognize the... And this has been a little common thread of mine through the years, the last couple of years especially. What does it mean to recognize that we're dealing with empire here, that the notion we fantasize about that this country is some sort of democracy or based on democracy, it's so much baloney, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean,
it always has been.
I mean, Scott, Jeffrey, Robert in Australia, y'all are much more likely to experience something more resemblant of democracy than anything that's going on here. I mean, look, the very fact of, you know, whether or not whatever the contents of the fiscal baloney crisis are, the fact that the people of the United States said very vocally, to the tune of in excess of 70, maybe upwards of 80%, fix this, and you've got an element inside the Congress in the form of the Republican Party that says screw you. I mean, doesn't that put paid to any notion of democracy being in operation anywhere in this country?
Well, there's a difference between democracy at the federal level and democracy at the community level. And I think democracy in Sweden, like every company you have, like you as a worker are involved in meetings at the workplace. You get your 2 cents worth. You have often you have union representations on the board. It's mandated, and you have more democracy in community organizations in your school. It's just it's everywhere at the grassroots level, which facilitates it at a higher level. So it's maybe it comes from being a smaller country, but to talk about the U.S. House of Representatives and then Senate is even being possible given the finances of the United States campaigns being democracy. It's never going to work. It's the system is designed not to work.
That's kind of my point though, Scott. And please, everybody, don't just be quiet all at once. During the last PRISM chat session that Dr. Bill was on, they were talking about the German concept of, you know, legally mandating labor participation in the overall determination of the business of the corporation. And that's kind of the same thing you're describing in Sweden, Scott, and it works. I mean,
it's a social democratic model. It's all over Europe, especially Northern Europe.
And yet one of the things that I found most interesting out of that is that it's a model that works within the territorial confines of the given companies. But when they move outside the national boundaries, they don't take it with them. For instance, there is no there's no labor management mandate model at the Mercedes plant in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Nor are the Japanese management models fully in play at Hyundai or Kia or Toyota or, you know, throughout the Confederacy. You know, there's some token level of it, but the first thing they did when they, you know, the reason they moved into the Confederacy to build their cars was because they knew that they were not going to get any pushback from any of those unions.
Well, yeah, well, yes, of course. The corporations and companies are always out for the bottom line. If they see a more exploitative system elsewhere, they're not going to say, "Oh, we're reformed people because we've done what we've had to do in a more social democratic state in Europe. We're now reformed people." They're not. They are still corporations with the corporate mentality, and they're going to act like corporate thugs if the law allows.
But my question is, they've got empirical proof that the system works within those constructs. Why would you not take a working model and go somewhere else and take it with you when you go somewhere else?
The competitive disadvantage of being the only one doing so, and right, maybe just part of it's the peer pressure of, you know, being a, hey, I'm taking IKEA to the United States. I'm going to act like the other big American corporations and be. IKEA in the U.S., if I understand it, is pretty pretty bloodthirsty and pretty.
Well, I mean, and it's that, that's and that's
and
not.
And it would be that way too here if the the law and the people here let them get away with it. It is the constant act of keeping them on their toes through legislation and solidarity and fighting them all the time. I mean, they never reform. You just have to. You have to keep your eye on them.
So is
it?
Oh.
Go ahead. I'm shutting my mouth.
Will from Chicago here. The whole reason we had of German companies implement labor participation on the boards is that after World War II, the Truman administration rewrote the constitutions for Japan and Germany while we were dealing with the infamous Do Nothing Congress. So a German corporation that works in the U.S. will likely ignore that law because, one, they can, and two, they don't have to deal with the headaches they would at home. Let's face it, corporations are about one thing only, making money. It is not a cooperative where workers own things such as the Mondragon cooperative in Spain, but it's rather about power. And the great problem in the U.S. is we have politicians, at least one political party, the Republicans, and a reasonably large chunk of the Democratic Party, which is willing to go along with people pursuing power at the corporate level in exchange for financial donations. That's part of the point why labor was weakened in the U.S. so that it becomes easier for the corporations to do what they want. And along comes Bill Clinton saying, well, the unions are weak. Let's try to get money off of Wall Street. And this is why we haven't seen what we saw in the 1980s. Hundreds of bank of SNL people were prosecuted, but not now with the bank crisis we had in 2008 onwards.
Yeah, it's back. It's the destruction of the unions, and here in Sweden we are still around 60-70% unionized, and the two political parties, the left party, which is the old Communist Party, they've renamed themselves, but that was a bad brand name, and the Social Democrats, and but they're very alert as to what's going on in the corporate world. They know that it's only by sticking together, and it's only by scratching that itch, you say, going after these companies and not letting them get away with what they want to do, that you're going to preserve this system. I mean, you don't win something and coast. It's
right.
Eternal vigilance.
Exactly. Eternal vigilance, because let's face it, there are people in this country, and Eisenhower identified them in a letter to one of his cousins as the crazy Texas oil billionaires and a few like-minded individuals who wanted to scrap Social Security, who would like us to return to where we were circa 1900, namely a small middle class, a very poor working class with very few rights and very few hopes for betterment, and a ruling elite who pretty much bought and sold Congress the way kids would play trading card games.
Well, that's where it's gone in the 30 years I've been gone. I mean, the country is not the same. It has gone exactly the direction you described, Will.
This is
it. Changing.
They held up what we see happening in third world countries such as Mexico as an ideal.
Yes, rates to the bottom, and very consciously so.
So I just wanted to say that the unions represent a contravailing power that's being annihilated, and what you'll see is the attack on the rest of the safety net has a lot to do with the weakness of the labor movement in total. And I think there's a direct correlation between that power diminishing and the boldness of the Democrats and Republicans to talk about the third rail. It's being stepped on, and it's becoming not the third rail. And I don't know, maybe there's an argument to be made, but I just see that the lack of labor power is allowing everything to unravel right in front of our faces.
Exactly, Sandra. That's what I'm saying. Like over here, we see that as something you just don't let up on. And
right.
In the U.S., people here have seen the labor disaster in the U.S. and it keeps people alert. They say, "Oh my God, that is definitely we can't allow this to go because you are so right. You take away labor's power, and it all unravels.
No, and it's a chilling effect. You think what went on in Detroit would have happened if the labor power hasn't been so diminished? I mean, it's just stunning to watch, and there's no response from the government. And people don't realize that unions need the government more than corporations. So,
yeah, the real lack of walking shoes.
Well, how many people happen to notice what the French Supreme Court did with the French tax increases in the last few days?
Yeah.
We've convinced ourselves over here that we're all independent of each other. And if you don't join together, that's what happens. Divide and conquer, right?
It's a strategy older than the pyramids, and I think what we are seeing is perhaps the beginning of a reaction to that in the U.S., while the rest of the world is saying, no, we don't want to go there.
Exactly.
I mean, so I think we should have some hope, but it's going to take a lot of hard work because we have billionaires against us and their resources, and we also have they paid mouthpieces on Fox and elsewhere, whereas people like Bob Kincaid and the Horn have to try to struggle to stay afloat. So we have to realize our own power, and this is my hope for 2013, that the American people and people everywhere will wake up and realize they are strong and unified. If that happens...
We've had 32 years of the push for you're an independent person and you can stand on your own.
Bootstraps. Don't forget the bootstraps and that rising tide that's lifting all them boats.
That's
yes,
us.
Yes, unfortunately, it was Thurgood Marshall who said, for anyone who ever pulled up their own bootstraps, they had the bootstraps provided by someone and had at least a little help from a parent, teacher, none, or other concerned person. So I think we are seeing a reaction to the prevailing ideology of the past 32 years. The question is when it will really kick in. And I think a lot of younger people have had it. The GOP in certain respects and their philosophy seems to remind me of the title of a Susan Sarandon movie, Dead Man Walking.
By the way, if I could just real quick, Will, thank you very much for bringing up the way that we survive here. A little announcement. We are $20 toward meeting Darlene's double down challenge. So I want to thank one of our Gregs very much for that. And an email coming in from Ron in Raleigh. You've all heard his periodic takes on. Well, they're sort of a rotated 45 degrees through space and time approach to the difference between this and, say, for-profit media radio. He said, how about this, Bob?
Today, here on the EIB network, we'll be Skyping with all our listeners, friends, in a free-flowing conversation on any subject, my friends. Well, any subject, except perhaps, OxyContin and Little Dominican Boys.
Yeah, that's not... You know, another one of those moments from Ron of stuff that's not going to happen on for-profit radio. I just love that. Hey, let's continue the experiment. Let's bring on another phone call.
Hey, Bob, yeah. Bob, can I make an announcement?
Yes,
tell
please.
Something real quick. I've maxed out with the number of people that can be on the call and actually talk. So if you don't want to talk, just drop off and maybe I can add someone else that does.
Okay, that's the only
really need. I think
we're. I'll volunteer to do so.
I think we're at 20.
Let me say Happy New Year.
Duncan, I will drop out and jungle punch here, Thomas. I will drop out and give somebody a chance to add to the conversation.
I think
Happy New Year's, everybody.
Okay, Thomas.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Thomas. Thanks for all your help all year long.
Happy New Year, Jug.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Thank you, Bob.
Happy New Year, Joe.
And,
Happy New Year.
I'm
what we really need to do
But what we really need to do is increase the inheritance tax to remove the landed gentry class that is being created and which is dumping all this money into the elections to perpetuate their own existence and continuance.
Mm-hmm. I think that was an amen from Brother Albert there, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I'd buy that for a dollar.
Yeah. Hey, let's get even more creative and bring one more voice into the conversation. I'll bring it not via Skype, but by the phones themselves. Hey, welcome to the program.
Happy New Year, Bob.
Happy New Year, Jim.
How are you?
I'm well, and say hi to the Skype group.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I wish you all
Happy New Year, Jim.
Thank you.
Hi, Jim.
Happy New Year, Jim.
Happy New Year.
Hello, Jim.
Hello.
Jim. Hello.
Hello, Pamela. How are you?
Here's Isaac.
Hi, Jim.
Hello. Hello,
hello,
hey.
Jim.
Hello, hey. Hello, hey to everybody.
Hey, do you mind if I say something first in reference to Jim? This is Isaac. I hope you can hear me.
Yeah.
Jim, I love your calls. I love your perspective on life and some things is very enjoyable and funny. And everyone else. I don't want to disregard or disrespect anybody else, but I love everybody who calls in on the show. But Jim is something that I reflect upon later on in the day when I listen to the replays of the show. And quite interesting, Jim.
Well, listen, thank you. I thank you very sincerely for your comments there. I don't bring a whole lot because diminishing capacity and stuff like that and frustration with a lot of things. So I basically have comments that in many times aren't worth a whole lot, but they come from the heart and they also come from the head and a lot of experience in my life. And that's about it.
Well, they're funny, too. Enlightening and funny. That's what I like about it. So keep it up.
Well, you know, considering the times in which we live, sometimes a little humor never hurts. And I've been through some pretty rough times myself, believe it or not, and I won't go into all that because who needs to be bored with that on New Year's Eve, but sometimes you have to develop some type of gray or black humor or what else, or tell stories of this, that, and the other. And I hope that they are contributive and not deleterious.
I just want to add, Jim, that your stories about your dad, I fall in love with the old guy. Sounded like he was a great character.
He was. He absolutely was. And he would literally be quite upset to see what's going on here in this country today, particularly with
you're lucky to have a father like that.
Well, he was a very good man, and he did a lot of good things. And the one thing about it he tried to do was to leave this world a better place than when he found it. And that's the only thing I can say about him at this point. But I wish everybody, like I say, a Happy New Year. It looks like our government is not working too well tonight, and they're playing some type of game, and you know, this is no time for brinksmanship. We're playing with a lot of things here.
Jim, I would submit that we handled a game of brinksmanship better, or that we had a... Here, let me see if I can organize my thoughts before they get out of my mouth. We had a better good-faith partner in brinksmanship in the Soviet Union in 1962 than we do in the Republican Party of 2012.
Oh, there's no comparison, Bob. None whatsoever. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, compared to the years of John Fitzgerald Kennedy and Mrs. Kennedy, the people we have up there now, as far as I'm concerned, are basically just trash who are there to, as in the Forbidden City, they are there for one thing only, to fill their own rice bowls. And Washington has even become more forbidden.
Well, I don't know. I don't know why it always works out this way. It's probably a function of my own psychology, Jim. But it seems that whenever this topic comes up, we always have some some lunatic from South Carolina to go to, and I don't know if you caught this or not, but Lindsey Graham has threatened that he will personally burn the economy of the nation to the ground if he doesn't get to do some granny starving and start means testing Social Security and Medicare and raise the retirement age for Social Security. I've got the audio here. It does not translate well across Skype.
I saw it on television earlier, Bob.
That just makes you want to make you know strangling little forest animal noises. The nerve of him!
I'm ashamed of him as a brother officer, and I'm ashamed of him as a senator, and I'm ashamed of him that he doesn't have the guts to come out and tell people what he really is. And I'm sorry that he is taking out his own personal frustrations on poorer people than he, because he cannot come out and admit that he is as gay as a picnic basket.
How do you just rattle those off, Jim? You know, someday.
Takes one to know one, buddy, but I'll tell you one thing. What can I say? I mean, every time Lindsey comes on, my gaydar just goes straight up to the, you know, it hits the roof.
It goes to 11.
I think we can interchange pickle basket and Lindsey Graham. We know who we're talking about. New code word for Lindsey Graham, pickle basket.
Gay is a picnic basket. That's exactly what he is. I mean, this guy is just so closeted and so repressed. And I really think that the meanness, and there's a lot of meanness. I mean, you know, he's almost the second cousin or first cousin to Roy Cohn.
Might as well be.
As far as I'm concerned, a gay who hates gays and a gay who hates everybody else because he's not like anybody, you know, everybody else and doesn't enjoy a heterosexual life or whatever. And, you know, there are historical studies about people like that. Like J. Edgar Hoover was a good example of that.
It's kind of like what Sandra was saying earlier regarding we have a security state, and really nothing's changed since Hoover days. We even have a Roy Cohn. I mean, we have the Hooverisms and all the other, and the empire expanding, and now no enemy other than what? The people.
Yeah.
You know, the poor people.
Well, Albert, don't forget Miss McConnell. You got to throw her in there.
Mm-hmm. I hear you, Sandra. I hear you. How are things in Sacramento?
Oh, you know, it's kind of cold, but it's California. I'm not gonna lie.
At this point, I would gladly trade places with you because I'm looking at lots of ice and snow, and it's.
Did you say cold in Cali?
No.
That's why I'm sort of backing up because I sound like an idiot. Yeah, it's California. It's all right.
It's about zero here in North Dakota. Damn.
Well, I can imagine what it's like there because the only thing you have between you and the Arctic Circle are fence posts.
And they don't stop much in the way of wind.
I'm afraid they don't. God knows, that's for sure.
You know, one of the things Sandra mentioned, Chinless Mitch, and one of the things I found most interesting out of this is that he has put on this, and I have great reverence for the long artistic traditions of various peoples, and I feel almost, well, I do feel bad about referring to what he's been doing, getting up to the podium in the Senate every so often, and saying, "Oh, we might have a deal here," as Kabuki theater. Sorry, Tim, but it's some sort of stylized BS. But the reason he's doing it, and very few people have commented on it, but I think it's well worth noting. The reason he's trying to suddenly appear statesmanlike when this was the first man out of the gates who said that the job of the Republican Party was to make Barack Obama a one-term president,
Oh, yeah.
The reason he's doing this right now is to try to look statesmanlike, because now there are two polls in the state, in the Commonwealth, sorry, of Kentucky, one Democrat and one Republican, that both came out with the same results. He is only he is 2 years out from his next election, from his reelection bid, and he is only 4 points up on Ashley Judd.
Oh, dear. You know, I think the Bureau of Standards should enact a new term of measurement, and they should call it the McConnell. And a McConnell should be how much non-shit or nonsense and bullshit that you can utter in 5 minutes.
Well, if that's the case, we'll have to you know, add on all the relevant prefixes and stuff, Jim, because he's pumped out a kilo McConnell today alone.
A tera
McConnell.
Oh yeah, yeah. I have periodically been looking at Bud Abbott and Lou Costello on TCM, and I haven't seen those guys in years since I was a kid. But and then I go back to see what's going on with the fiscal situation and whether or not the Congress is going to have an up and not vote, and I just think to myself, oh, Lord, let's just go back to Bud Abbott and Lou Costello because, hell, they make more sense. They really do. They make more sense, and so does Larry Moe and Curly. I mean, you know, God almighty, when I look at these people up there like McConnell and, you know, Harry Reid to a certain extent, I mean, I don't know what these guys are doing. I mean, they are paid to do the people's business and take care of the people whom they represent, and they're not doing their job. And if anybody else in the federal or the private sector lower than an elected person as they would be doing the same thing, they would be terminated. Or there would be a proposal to remove them.
Well, I wanted you to know, Jim, you just got a little piece of fan mail in from Dano. He said, among Jim's many contributions was his recommendation of On a Field of Red that I purchased back when and have been reading since the fall. He says it is a great read.
It is the most comprehensive study of the Russian Revolution and the coming and advent of World War II that I have ever read. And believe you me, having a master's in history and 30 hours beyond, that takes a lot for me to say, and I've had to read a lot of books, some of which, you know, there are some books, as Francis Bacon said, that you can nibble at, some that you can take a little time with and some to be devoured, but On a Field of Red is one to be eaten as hastily as you can possibly eat it, because there is so much information in that book that, and it is so well organized by those two authors, it is so well organized that, you know, anyone can look and see exactly what brought Europe into the situation that it was in the 30s, 40s, and earlier than that with the coming of the Communist Revolution and that period of history. But it really is. And I appreciate his comments. I do.
Well, thank you, Jim, and thank you, Dano, for the. I don't know. That's not a recommendation so much as a confirmation. Your picnic basket comment, Jim, got a lot of giggles via email, and.
Well, I was just referring to this man's inherent meanness. I mean, you can look at him on TV, and there's just so much hostility in that individual. I would love to see him on a couch with a well-trained psychiatrist and also a dose of scopolamine or truth serum to really make that son of a bitch just come out and say, okay, here it is. But like I say, he to me is almost the embodiment of Joe McCarthy and Roy Cohn.
Okay, is this one of those periodic silences?
I'm going to jump in and say goodnight to everybody. It's well past Bonzo's bedtime.
Ah, well, that's true. That's true, Scott. Thank you for coming in and playing. And as 2012 draws to a close, let me also thank you for the Beat the Swede challenge, because it has proved a huge motivator over the last several months, and it cannot be understated.
May I ask what the situation is for this month?
Well, we are going. We're hoping there's about $80 worth of, or I'm sorry, $60 worth of challenge yet to be met, and that will actually get us to the $2,500 mark, and maybe a few dollars over, if that happens between now and midnight. So,
you have to sell off another dog for the money to pay up.
That's
a medical reason.
I've decided you're all going to be sold for medical research, right?
No, that's fine. I felt I had to do something. This is a great little community.
Well, you know, we had that. We had some significant financial setbacks that have put us in this position, and this is, your challenge has helped fill that void in a big way, and it's. All I can say is thank you on behalf of everyone.
If we can keep you away from Belgians and railway stations, we'll be all right.
Well, there we go.
Hell no.
No, Albert. I got ripped off for 3,000 euros by a fake translating company this fall. Somebody was stealing people's work, passing it off his own, and never paying off, so. There are shysters and thieves out there all over the place.
That'd be Google Translate?
No, God, no. No, it's just somebody's passing themselves off at the translation agency, so I was submitting my work, and then they were obviously selling it off for a lower price, but I never, all of a sudden, nothing was paid. It just, I've been able to trace this person down to some place in Jordan. I don't know how to get a hold of him, get somebody to court in Jordan, but I got ripped off royally this fall.
Well, I'm sorry you did, buddy. I'm sorry you did.
So there are. Yeah, that's just the way it goes. Let the buyer beware. Just, there are crooks on the internet.
Oh, God.
And they're not all from Nigeria.
It is definitely pro caveat emptoris, right, Bob?
Absolutely.
By the way, I never got my $2,000.
Nor the recliner either, I trust.
A recliner. When that fool called here, when that idiot called here, I asked him, does it vibrate in the right places?
Jesus, Jim.
And he said, what do you mean? And I said, how old are you? Have you gone through puberty? I said, God knows that if you've been through puberty, you're old enough to have a pass. I said, what kind of pass do you have, and what kind of outfit are you working for? He said, well, would you like a check for $2,000? I said, sure. Send it on.
Send it by Unicorn Post while you're at it.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll probably get a packet full of Monopoly money or something like that, but it was an interesting conversation. It really was. I don't know. I couldn't help but interject that when the gentleman was talking about ripped off of these foreign countries. I get all these offers and stuff like this, but you wouldn't believe how these companies are out there to rip people off. It is just incredible.
Well, isn't that mainstream business with the Bank of America and Citibank and Chase? And
yeah, that's a business model now, Albert.
Yeah, that's how they run, you know. Oh, we're going to orchestrate your checking account so you won't have money in it, even if you thought you did. No, $75 in insufficient. You know, they'll wait and they'll stack your bill. Ugh, filthy, filthy, filthy. That one's in the wind. I was going to say, hopefully 2013 is a more honest year, but we'll see.
Well, you know, I hope so, too. And Albert, I wish you the best of luck with your new baby and your new business, and may they both come to health and fruition.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
I know they mean a great deal to you.
Oh, yeah, I got to get some pictures, more pictures, updated ones.
Well, you know, if you and Renee are okay with it, shoot a couple of snaps to Agnes so that maybe they can go up on the website so everybody can see little Lito.
Little Lito, he's a beauty. Well, I thank you very much, and thank you, Jim. You have a happy new year, and happy new year to everybody. And Scott, I think Scott was saying goodnight, so happy new year to him.
know, he's already there, though. Sweet, lucky guy.
Yeah, well, you know, enjoy. But understand, we're all enjoying a good capitalist New Year here. Poor Scott has had to endure one of those communist Scandinavian New Years, right? I mean, don't let all that talk of high grade, high quality skyrockets fool you.
You know, it is kind of funny when, you know, you say we're celebrating a capitalist New Year as we're being held hostage over here by gunpoint, by, you know, unmasked Republican, you know, hooligans.
Yeah, non-lone bag man.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't even want a helicopter. They just, you know, they just want to kill us all. They're just, you know, yeah. I mean, you know, I look at those you know, because we're talking about the House, and the House is causing problems. Well, it's the gerrymandering, isn't it? I think, you know, that could be a new one to tackle, this gerrymandering crap. Well, you can't touch it, though, right? I don't know what to do. I'm just saying, I see that as a massive problem. And, you know, that's why we have the infection, you know, that's all. You know, clean the wound, make it a little more fair, put grids on states, and that's the way it is. You know, like it or not, this is your grid part. This is how you have to represent, you know.
Yeah, and by the way, Albert, I have to tell you, it's not a big read at all, because it didn't take me any time, but I think you will definitely be inspired to read Osha Gray Davidson's Clean Break.
Clean Break.
Yeah, it's about how it is that Germany has managed to create their renewable energy infrastructure. And my guess is when you read it, you'll just sit there and go, yeah, well, of course, yes, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's 53% now, right? They installed 53% of solar panels. And, you know, the honest thing is, you know, we can play all the games we want here in the United States, and when, you know, our toys are all broken and we look over to Sweden and we look over to Germany, you know, we're going to have to follow that path because they're the ones with, you know, with the better trail. And I mean, if we believe in any sort of kind of market, you know, that these I don't even know, these puppet masters that sit in dark rooms, you know, that they adhere to and we follow along with it, you know, we're going to have to go that way. I mean, we have no choice. And, you know, so Sweden and Germany, keep going. Just keep going. Just don't look back. Just go forward. Keep going. And we'll
Albert, can I add something?
Eventually.
I did notice in the paper reading that Germany's exports are going up. And, you know, high union cost, high cost of living, but their exports are still going up.
Mm-hmm.
That model works.
It does.
That's all
work.
I want to say.
It even works.
It works.
Yeah, it even works here in the States. I mean, I'm sure you heard of Walmart, right? Well, I don't think everyone could probably agree with Walmart.
Why do you think I left?
Yeah, you know, exactly. I mean, but I think everyone can sort of agree that Walmart's getting real chintzy now. It's starting to really, you know, the lights are starting to flicker in that place, and the parking lots are starting to get real cracked, and, you know, their margins are getting thinner and thinner, and now their workers want more, and they're getting under more and more stress. And then you also got to look at another company that's similar, it's Costco. And Costco doesn't have unions, because they don't need unions, because they pay their employees an honest living wage, and they give them great health care, and all this stuff, and why, and discounts, and all that stuff. Because, well, they treat them better than they need. Then you don't need a union. Union should be like the bare minimum. It should just be standard. You know, it's like seatbelts in a car. It should be unions at work. It just should be that way. You know, and we should strive, businesses should strive to say, I treat my employees the best, and that's why I get the productivity I get out of them. And that's why we don't have turnover and all. It just makes sense. It just makes sense. It's like mirepoix or whatever, you know, when you cook. There's certain things you just got to do a certain way. And hopefully the United States catches on, you know. How many TV dinners can you burn in the microwave at once, you know? America will find out, goddammit, and they'll put it on TV. we're getting there. I know it's scary and it's all that, and, you know, but don't forget, you know, it's like we're hackers. Right? These hackers, right? You know, they come up with technology to survey us, and then they come up with a hack to change it. It's just, you know, you know, there'll be little LED infrared blinders to cameras. There'll be all kinds of stuff. And, you know, it was funny. Just to say, even in other ways, technology, that's just sort of neat to me. I saw this at the store yesterday, and I didn't purchase any beer. I got a baby. I can't be getting hammered and stuff. I got things to do. But I'll be, you know, I'm celebrating in spirit, and that's how we're going to look at it. But I was in the grocery store, and the man had a little Galaxy S3. What a piece of equipment that thing is. It's crazy. It's a huge, big thing. It's kind of thin, didn't look heavy, and he's taking pictures of barcodes. And I asked him, I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I go on to Beer Advocate, and, you know, and it tells me about the beer. And I was like, whoa, what? And he's like, yeah, and because I work here, I'm saying to the Beer Advocate people that we have it here at the store with a little smartphone. And I'm sitting there thinking, well, what's going to happen when people have Google Glasses? And you're able to, you know, well, look at Bob and say, oh, is Bob a wanted fugitive? Or, you know, I mean, I don't know. There's so many possibilities, and there's always going to be an answer to the something. You know what I mean? And I have great hope in the future. I think we're, you know, yeah, we'll have hurdles, and we're going to hit snags, but I think we're always going to be moving forward. And we're not going to go back to 1900s. You know what I mean? I'm not. And I don't think anybody else in this room is. And, you know, it only takes one candle to light up a room sometimes, so a couple of us can, you know, really get going. You know, and there's got to be, you know, we're, you know, I hear sometimes people say we're a minority. I think we're a sizable minority. We're growing more and more and more every day. Look at the cannabis legalization polls. Look at, you know, the way people actually start looking at health care. Yeah, I'm sorry, I was filibustering. Sorry.
No, you don't want to, but the, cannabis spreading, there goes the motivation. People get stoned.
Well,
not going to rise up.
That's a good joke. And that's a
a question to pose, and especially to Alexandra. Does the U.S. have to hit bottom before the people really catch on? Does it have to get much worse before people start lighting those torches and picking up the pitchforks?
That is a good question,
and
it may be affirmative in the answer.
Because I'm much more pessimistic than you are, Albert.
Okay, well, I get it. I mean,
I was looking at New Scientist while holding my little puppy's paw from trembling, and they were talking about this wave of the future, these robots, you know, that could do all this work. And then they were talking, you know, like they have them in surgery where people can operate in one country on a patient someplace else. And they were pointing out, and this really means that you can then put them in factories all over the developed world and run them from India, have workers trained in outsource physical labor through this technology. I mean, these capitalists, they never sleep. And every little invention that comes along, they find out a way to screw the working man in the developed world.
Well, if I might add, in conjunction with the robots that we all need to invest in them, and then when we have the big die-off after the climate catastrophe, then all will be well. I mean, it's craziness, but it's always directed towards eliminationist type of rhetoric. And, you know, Albert, you're quite optimistic, and, you know, I'm not.
I know. I just think, you know, I think there are certain epochs of history that we won't revisit. I think there are certain bars that we can't go back to. And while they'll try, you know, and yeah, there will be robots and there will be less work, but there's also, you know, what is that going to do to money? It's going to render it useless. I mean, when everyone has solar panels on their roofs, and when we have electric cars and there's power grid and all this other stuff, and, you know, we can get people to start doing things that, you know, really speak to their heart for a living. You know, if you can do these things, I mean, you know, I mean, are you going to have a McMansion with, you know, a big green lawn? No, there are certain changes that are going to have to take place, and that's going to be the market that it's going to phase itself out. It's like the thin film solar voltaics and, you know, these polysilicon, anybody check the price? It's probably under $6 now. I mean, and
who's going to have the money to put the solar panel on and have the electric car with this waste to the bottom? It sounds like a very small percent. Vision of huge numbers of unemployed that are just totally marginalized, and they're going to be totally left out. These technologies are great if people can afford them, and their people can't afford food, let alone something that's productive. There's no redistribution. It's just still going the wrong way. It's not trickle down. It's suck up. It's like a giant vacuum cleaner to the top.
This plays in, Scott, to the book that I recommended a couple of minutes ago, because there's a little bit of a history in there of the fact that Germany accomplished what it did with energy and is accomplishing what it did with energy, or what it is going to with renewable energy, because it has or had some degree of functioning government.
In Sweden too. I'm talking about the U.S. and I don't see the U.S. having a functioning government. I see the U.S. becoming a third world state.
Uruguay, and that goes back to that.
150 years ago, Uruguay was a developing nation. Look at it today. There are examples of a country that is well developed and just.
I think one of the
Roman Empire falling. I want to see one go. It's cynical, but.
Yeah, but the thing is, because of the short span of human life, Scott, in comparison with how long it takes an empire to go from vibrant and robust to teetering and collapsing, nobody ever gets to see one go. It's kind of like the stuff that happens in super colliders, only in reverse. Nobody puts up a sign that says the empire is now dead. That's a conversation, like I said, that I got into on Facebook about, you know, what does it mean to live in a dying empire? Because I think it's pretty damned obvious that we are.
The Soviet Union was a good dress rehearsal, if you were paying attention to that. That had, you know, some pretty nasty collapse elements about it.
Well, that's very true, but I don't necessarily know that it correlates with what's going on here, because and I think Jim could probably speak to this. The Soviet Union was collapsed both inside and from outside.
Absolutely. Basically they spent so much money on armaments and other programs and things of that nature, and they had a nation who, instead of wanting more submarines, they wanted more washing machines and other home conveniences, and the system just couldn't, which was called democratic centralism and a planned economy or Gosplan, it fell in at the nucleus. And it expanded, and that was it. It just collapsed.
You know, Reagan's given all the credit for the collapse of the Soviet Union, but, you know, there were CIA white papers coming out in the late 60s and early 70s predicting exactly what happened on the timeline it happened on with the Soviet Union.
Yes, sir.
But the larger question, I think, Sandra, is, at what point does the level of dysfunction this government has experienced become so bad that it is no longer sustainable?
I think because of the global interdependence that's going on right now, you know, you're gonna have more of a multipolar type of arrangement for a while, you know, with, say, China and some of the BRIC countries. I mean, I think that there's, I mean, you're not gonna have any sort of instant collapse going on with the U.S. because it's too tied in with the functioning global economy. I mean, you have deteriorations and, you know, I don't think it's going to just implode.
No, but I was thinking over the weekend, and this was part of that Facebook exchange, I got to thinking about the three big periods, three big periods of significant popular social change in this country. The first one, obviously, was between 1861 and 1862 and 1865. And that's not just the 13th Amendment. That's also the Morrill Act, the Morrill Act that created state colleges and universities.
Yeah, land grant colleges.
Right. I mean, that was significant for its era. So then your next period of popular social change or social change for the decency of working people is between 1933 and 1937. And then the next one comes between 1964 and 1967. And it's weird because I don't think I imposed this on it, it's weird because they're all little 3-year periods that happen in between presidential election years, and also happen at the thing that all three share in common is that you had something happen inside government, inside the United States electoral system, that all but marginalized the reactionary hardcore right wing. The Southern Democrats, who had stymied effective government for 20 years in Washington, were gone between 1862 and 1865. The Republicans, who had completely wrecked the economy of the country, were gone between 1933 and 1937, and you had a massive Democratic majority in the House and the Senate, also in that post-Kennedy assassination period. And so in all of those, you had an opportunity, and in each of those instances, the change that came about, the legislation that was put through, was acknowledged by the so-called hardcore, you know, the serious left in this country as not being nearly enough, and there's an argument to be made that it wasn't. But it's the only time that this government has ever gotten anything done, and that's not exactly a stirring recommendation for this country.
Brings us back to gerrymandering and the political funding. If you can't, you still have to. I mean, the right wing is on the verge of doing some sort of a belly flop, thank goodness. But do they have the financial resources to keep that from really happening?
And
by all rights, this should have been a landslide for Obama and the Democrats this time around. ever since Bush, I mean, look at Bush. And what a mess that was. I mean, that should have been a clean sweep at the... I just don't see in a fair fight, in a free and fair fight, how it should... It isn't 60-40 in both houses or more.
Well, this is gerrymandering.
Right, and I mean, when Louis Gohmert of Texas can walk out and say the insane crap he does, when Michelle Bachmann, coming from a district of otherwise supposedly sane Minnesotans, you know, Minnesota nice, right? Or Steve King from Iowa, you know, salt of the earth farm people, right? When those people get reelected time after time after time after time, it is only because their districts have been so thoroughly gerrymandered as to make it almost impossible to unseat them. And that plays into, you know, and that's a matter of politics being put before the well-being of the people. You know, congressional redistricting is not rocket science. It's fairly easy to do. Even in the states that are still under supervision, and should be noted, may not be for very much longer if Fat Tony Scalia and Slappy and the crowd get hold of the Civil Rights Act of 1965 and the Voting Rights Act of 1964, you know, it's going to be Katie bar the door. The Confederacy will be re-empowered because it's the Confederacy that's doing it to us again.
I actually have a master's in geography, and back in the 80s, there was all sorts of talk about ways of doing congressional districts with all sorts of criteria and making them very representative, taking all the politics out, and that was an old idea even back in the 80s, when I was in grad school in the 80s, and it hasn't gone away. So, I mean, there is such a hurdle here. Even if the Democrats would get in, they would gerrymander. I just don't see how you can get the people's will into legislation on these crucial issues like congressional districts, how they're devised, and the money. It's just such a corrupt nation. It's an incredibly corrupt nation. People, like Southern Italy, you know, its own way, the U.S. scares the hell out of me.
I think it's more like Beijing before the last emperor failed, or when they were in power, to tell you the truth. That's the reason I've always referred to Washington as the Forbidden City. Because, you know, these people have the power to just do all kinds of things in order to keep themselves in a position. And I have one solution. I'm not going to say any more, and I appreciate your listening. Have you ever heard of the defenestration of Prague, Bob?
Yes.
If the house had windows that I could reach, and if I had some means to do it, I would throw, and the Senate too, I would hope they all had on very thick cloaks, because I would punch all of them right out the window.
Well, it's hard. It's
about
hard.
The pacifist.
No, I am not a pacifist. I am into nonviolence.
Jim, don't you get don't you lead us down this road?
No, I'm not. I mean, you know, I mean, there's certain solutions to certain problems, and when you have people who are in such a position and being so recalcitrant and so, and they're not doing their work, well, they should be defenestrated, not necessarily in the physical sense, but in some other sense. That's what I'm saying. They don't need to be there.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Very few people ever think about the fact that the Constitution contains a provision that says that that a two-thirds majority of the membership of either house can throw out anybody it wants to. You can, if theoretically, if you could create a two-thirds majority body of progressive individuals or people with the good of the nation and not the party first at heart, you get two-thirds of them together, and the other one-third can be chucked. And that's a fact.
And out the window they go.
Yeah.
Not literally, but, you know.
Figuratively.
Exactly.
Yep, right.
Exactly. And, of course, there's some I wouldn't mind literally, to tell you the truth. I mean, that's just me talking, but...
Well, no, I mean, look, it's not like you're talking any more meanly, Jim, than they talk about us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
well,
when
exactly.
And the word cruel is the only one that applies. When these cruel bastards talk about how they think that my generation and the generations that are younger than my generation need to work till we're 70 because we, and this is the quote that I love the best, because we're all living longer. Yeah, that's the epitome of cruelty, because among other things, it is the most brutal of lies. People are not living longer. Lifespans are it's been shown. This isn't just Bob saying something. The science is out there. The statistical evidence is out there. Lifespans are decreasing in the United States, even as asshats like Lindsey Graham are talking about, people are living longer now.
Well, did Gregory say Obama has to talk tough to the seniors? I mean, that quote right there was like, wow, you know, you're a pig and...
Yeah, you mean Dave, David, right? Not Dick.
What's his name?
Yeah, the dancing master,
yeah,
Disco Dave, yeah. No.
Yeah, he, you know, he's always talking about inflicting pain on people, and, you know, he's horrifying.
MC...
And Obama said, well, basically kind of agreed with, I don't know if you read the whole quote, but, I mean, they're obsessed with, you know, causing total discomfort for the working classes and low-income people.
Yeah, because they like it when we beg, Sandra.
Yeah, they're not even hiding it anymore.
No, they don't. And what we're talking about is an increase to the misery index.
Mm.
Yeah, but it's our misery, and they're the ones doing the indexing, Jim. And,
well,
and the threshold of that index is not our misery, it's their pleasure.
Well, a rich man's war and a poor man's fight. Correlate those two.
Yeah, but you know, consider this, and I'm not going to divulge any details or anything, but I know for a fact that that David Gregory is in a house of worship every week, magnifying his own piety, and then comes in and talks about getting tough with seniors. I'm guessing that he's missing out on the critical element of his given faith, because there aren't any mainstream faiths that preach that the right thing to do is to go and take a dump on the elders of your society.
Capitalism, Bob. You forgot that faith.
Oy.
Invisible hand.
Yeah, it is a faith, isn't it?
I believe that that a lot of people in this country are literally brainwashed. And you were talking about McConnell earlier and what he said. There should be a significant uprising of people, even people that are voting for the right, because they're the ones that are going to get the most hurt from this. And yet, there's not a peep from them. And I can only explain it by them being brainwashed. I just come to that point of saying they've got to be brainwashed.
Kevin, I agree with you. I don't want you to consider where it comes from. People, they sit in their cars and they drive all day long. Even a little container, you know, that little container, and there is right-wing talk radio.
Yep.
So I think when you say brainwashed, that is a very apt description of what has gone on in the U.S. by talk radio, AM talk radio, in their cars. I think that's exactly what has happened.
But it's not just the AM talk radio. It's the religious industry who has... I don't remember religion being like this before 1980. I don't remember a religion that taught crush the seniors, crush the poor.
Well, that's because that's the watershed. That's the watermark, Kevin. Roughly 1980 and the rise of Reagan is the rise also of Jerry Falwell. Now, some of these politicized fundamentalists had been out there, but they were deeply, deeply marginalized. They were way out there on the fringes. But Jerry Falwell turned fundamentalist religion away from the spiritual and emotional thing that it had been, because the Southern Baptist Church, of which he was a part, was militantly anti-political before him. Because they were, they insisted, we'll stay out of politics as long as y'all stay out of our weird little faith. And Jerry Falwell brought him out of the closet and started him marching with his moral majority. I remember when I was a little bitty Baptist, I had a sterling silver pin I wore on my lapel to church every Sunday that said God first. And it came from Jerry Falwell.
Bob?
Yes.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah. Upton Sinclair wrote a book called The Prophets of Religion well over 100 years ago. It's a freely available public domain book. You ought to read it because you swear it could have been written 10, 15 years ago or less. It's contemporary. So I think this problem with the shysterism in religion, he was writing about it. Twain wrote about it. I mean, it goes back to the beginning of this country.
Right, because just as we were talking about those little three-year hiccups that we have had, we've also had much broader, full-on vomiting fits of religion, and they are called, euphemistically, Great Awakenings.
Yep.
And in fact, the great Great Awakening stories I like best is that of America's first blogger that Jeff Biggers writes about in the United States of Appalachia. Her name was Ann Royal, and she wrote a broadsheet called Paul Pry, and she excoriated these hucksters and flim-flam artists to the point that I think it was a Presbyterian minister got his flock together and attacked her printing operation and threw her printing press out a second-story window and literally drove her physically into the street. So that's some of the reality. Hey, let's have a little fun here. Let me try to bring another caller on via the landlines. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello.
Am I on the air?
I think you are. Who is this?
I spoke to you the other night. Actually, I called your house and it was late, thinking your show was live.
Oh, okay.
And my name is Juanita, and I know you have a Juanita already, so you can just call me Juan. So,
okay.
I'm delighted to be able to talk to you and your audience. I mean, as I told you, I just recently discovered your show. maybe about the last couple of weeks. And so I've been glued to the internet listening to your show. And I enjoy it very much.
Well, wonderful. Thank you very much. And I think there's some sort of glitchery going on inside the telephone box here. So don't go away, Juanita, but what we'll do is when I'm talking, I'll pot you down and then you can come back up. It seems to have remedied itself. So that's a good thing. Welcome to the conversation by all means. And first of all, I'm tickled pink that this is a conversation you want to be part of and think has value. So by all means, welcome.
Oh, yes. Thank you. But I wanted to say something. I hope no one will take it the wrong way. However, I think that for the past 40 years, as people of the left, I think we've made some errors, and they are errors that have that I think that are somewhat responsible for where we are today. And are you there, Bob?
I'm right here.
Oh, okay. But I mean, for example, you know, when Lyndon Baines Johnson announced that he was not going to run for office, mainly because the left was pissed off at him because of the war, and they wanted an anti-war candidate, and that was Eugene McCarthy. And then Eugene McCarthy, it looked like he was going to be the candidate, but then Bobby Kennedy came in, and then Bobby Kennedy, of course, was assassinated, and then came Hubert Humphrey. Well, the left rejected Hubert Humphrey, and frankly, most of us went home and sat down, and Nixon got in. And that seems to be a pattern that we have seemed to have used over and over and over again. When we don't get our way, we don't vote. Now, when we were fortunate enough to get rid of Nixon because of Watergate, okay, we got Carter. Again, Carter wasn't progressive enough. We were mad at Carter. So what did we do? We primaried Carter with Edward Kennedy. Okay, the damage is done. Again, we don't show up. Reagan gets in. And in the meantime, the country is moving further and further to the right. Okay, finally we get another turnaround. And here comes Clinton. Now, Clinton completely, in my opinion, put the final nail in the coffin of the Democratic Party. He basically used the same tactics to win as the Republicans did. He used the welfare thing. He used the crime thing. When he got in office, he got rid of Glass-Steagall. He did the Telecommunications Act. And still, we see the country is moving to the right. And we still, during the midterms in 96, were peeled again. So what happens? The Republicans take over in 96. And we basically don't get rid of them until Obama. But, you know...
But the thing is, it's an open question as to whether we did. Even in that short span of time between 2008 and 2010, the Democratic majority in the House was made up in large part of fake Republicans, you know, the so-called blue dogs.
I agree. I think that, I think it's kind of unfair, in my opinion, to totally blame Obama. When he got into office, the damage was done. And the, when I saw the image, when he had his inauguration and the image of Dianne Feinstein standing there, it was like, oh, nothing's going to change. I mean, because he's surrounded by 70-year-old Democrats who were basically Clinton, devotees. And, so, you know, he can't work with the Democrats because they have their agenda. And of course the Republicans are impossible. The left is mad at him. So I don't know at this point, unless we, I don't know, come up with some kind of formula or something to try to move the country forward. I just don't, I'm just totally, I don't know what can be done. I really don't. Other than, if possible, take up a fund and sue the Republican Party. So I don't know.
Well, and I think that's a big part, Juanita, of the conversation here, and that is what kind of answers are available to us out here. A lot of us have gotten to the point where we've got real concerns about, for instance, when we talk about Obama, our fears that Obama will cave in on something. I forget who wrote it first, but the question is, to what degree is that now caving in versus to what degree is that now a matter of behaving according to type? I cannot get over for the life of me that interview that he gave with that little South Florida TV station where he says that he's a Reagan Republican.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I agree. But at the same time, I think that in 2010, I thought, oh, sure, that now, we considering the what's at stake, you know, I belong to a peace group, and my best friend has been in the peace movement for probably 30 years, and I, you know, she doesn't want to vote for Democrats, you know, but then I tried to convince her that, you know, you're a peace activist, and yet who gets in office can really change, you know, who gets in office can determine, you know, if we're going to have wars or not. And certainly, I know Obama's not perfect, but God, I'd rather have him than Romney. And so there are things that we have to think about. I think that, I mean, we're so quick to throw the baby out with the bathwater. And I think in 2010, knowing what was at stake, we still stayed at home. And then what really got me was you had progressives going on television. It was Michael Moore, Christina Vanden Heuvel, what's her name? Huffington.
Ariana. Yeah.
Who is really not a progressive. But telling people that the people are going to stay at home. That seems strange to me. Strange, you know, and I guess that's what happened in 2010.
But let me interject here just for a minute, Juanita, if I may, that one of the frustrating things.
I'm nervous too, Bob, so.
Well, we have never lost a caller yet, and I hope it stays that way, and you're doing just fine. There's lots of, can I get an amen from the Skype chat?
Oh yeah, Bob.
Okay, yeah, there's amens rolling in via the type chat as well. No, you do. Yeah, you're doing just fine, Juanita. But let me just
amen from Bill of Rights man.
There we go. Just to put this out there for your consideration. Our the question is to what degree our politics have become utterly and completely and totally dysfunctional. Because even in what we see now, we're talking about a distinct and yet vocal minority of sociopaths who are ruining it for all of us. But to go back to what you said a minute ago, I guess I mean no disrespect, at least to Michael Moore, and probably not to Christina Vandenhoevel or Joan Walsh or any of these so-called liberals who know which fork to use with the shrimp.
Right.
But we are badly in need of a lot more ordinary discourse, a lot more ordinary dialogue. And when you see the types of folks that come onto these for-profit media television programs and a whole bunch of for-profit media terrestrial radio programs, then the only conclusion you can reach is that ordinary people are not welcome. We are too dumb to understand the situation, and in fact, that's why we have to have it explained to us. And if I may dare say so, that's the reason the Horn exists.
Yes, and I love your show for that reason. You know, I'm from Beckley, West Virginia. I mean, I'm working poor. So when I, you know, the kind of progressives that are on television, I doubt would invite me over for dinner. They might. They might, but I'm just saying, you know.
Well, you had that classic case, I guess, last week of some, and I think this was a right-winger, actually, not one from our side. But, you know, the person who said, and Sandra probably remembers, who was it that said that, sometimes you just have to eat chicken instead of beef?
Yeah,
that's that Ruth Marcus from the Washington Post.
Yeah. See, when you write something like that, you are utterly divorced from anything even vaguely resembling reality.
Exactly.
Because it's not a question between whether we're going to have Chateaubriand or the chicken Marco, you know, chicken breast Marco Polo. The question is whether we're going to have beans or no beans.
Yes.
And they don't seem to understand that. They don't seem to think that. I mean, when one on our side talks about food stamps, it's generally talked about in a sort of an academic way because they have never needed food stamps, not one day in their lives.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, as long as that remains the case among our betters in the for-profit media, we're going to continue to get the kind of for-profit media that we're getting now. So
exactly, and you know, I believe mainstream media is public enemy number one. I think it perpetuates, encourages a lot of the problems that we have in the country. It's dishonest. It's insulting, and.
What kind of economic theory says that, with any credibility, I suppose, what kind of economic theory, Juanita, says that we are going to get to prosperity by cutting food money by $80, $80 for somebody who's 72 years old?
Exactly.
I mean, there's a real moral disconnect that's way deep in, you know, it's systemic for anybody who thinks that way.
Well, I think when Reagan came in, he sort of took away America's conscience. And, you know, we've become a very harsh, mean-spirited, bully culture. And, you know, the people are, you know, we are a reflection of our leaders. Our leaders are bullies. When George Bush was in, he was saying things like wanted dead alive, and our leaders, you know, we are, you know, the people, or if you have crazy leaders, you have a crazy citizenry. So, I'm very, very distraught because I feel powerless. However, shows like yours, you know, it's uplifting, and it helps. It really does, because, you know, sometimes you feel like you're alone, and you think that, well, God, am I the only one that's disturbed about what, you know, what's going on here? And so, yeah, I, you know, was hoping that Obama would at least appoint some decent people to the FCC. But when the only good guy on the FCC, which is, his name is Michael, and I can't recall his last name at the moment, but he's been on the FCC for a long time, because he was very concerned with what was happening with the, the conglomerate, you know, that our media, you know, was being, you know, monopolized. And so there was all this talk that, you know, when Obama came in, that Michael Knopf, I think that's his name, that he was going to be president or chairman of the FCC. It didn't happen. And so now there is talk that the Obama administration may allow Rupert Murdoch to buy the Los Angeles Times and I think one of the Chicago papers, I forget which.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah, I signed a petition to try to stop it. You know, there's a petition online. I'll email it to you where they're trying to stop, you know, because of the, you know, what's going on in with him and the hacking, and for him to be able to expand his empire over here, after, you know, committing, I mean, I've been following that thing over there in England, and that is stunning. I mean, it's shocking what that man was able to do since Margaret Thatcher, you know.
Yeah.
And what's strange, Tony Blair, at the same time that Clinton passed the 1996 Telecommunications Act, Tony Blair passed a law over in England, similar. The only thing that Murdoch was, the British were fortunate enough that Murdoch did not get them to do away with their version of the fairness doctrine. However, David Cameron, that's what he was going to do. That's what he promised Murdoch if he got in office. And the only thing to stop Cameron from getting rid of their FCC was the scandal broke and it got really hot. And so the British dodged a bullet.
Well, Juanita, you've put a lot of food for thought out on the table. Let's jump to the Skype room. I know Cassie wanted to respond to some of your earlier comments about food. We also had a comment in via email from Jack in Shreveport. He says so many people don't realize that the question of beans or prescriptions or beans or electricity are not valid alternatives. There is a minimum set, and he says, and I mean set, of things that people need to live. People can't keep deciding between alternatives until they are down to just one thing to spend on. And he notes that the Chicago Tribune was the paper that you were mentioning. So
right.
The level of information availability in this little community is simply stunning. Cassie, are you there?
Hi.
Howdy.
Hi, Juanita.
Hi.
So I wanted to say that I think that a lot of the people who are on television are, or who are liberals on the blogs and stuff, they've never really been hungry, and they don't understand it at all. And I think that a big part of the problem is that somehow, and I don't know how, but somehow we have let the right on this country tell us that we should be ashamed of being poor, and that
exactly
be ashamed of taking help. And that I know that it was something that when I was a kid I had to hide. Well, there are a lot of things I had to hide, but I had to hide how poor we were. I had to hide that we didn't have food, and it was I actually this is a topic that I'm still amazed at how many people, even who knew me then, didn't know first that we had no food and then that we were on food stamps. And we, in my case, my mom was so ashamed that she wouldn't sign us up for food stamps. And my older brother signed us up without maybe quite the right signatures on the right forms. But he got us signed up for food stamps through school and for the free lunch program. And he did it all at school. And it's, I don't know, like they make you feel ashamed. Like,
oh, yeah.
You're not supposed to tell anybody.
Absolutely.
And that's
absolutely
why you
consider, if you will, yeah,
it means to be hungry.
There was that story out of Georgia last week that just sticks in my mind. The head of the welfare department, or the department that handles welfare in Georgia, is known for her desire to make sure that no one gets it. And she drove that point home by passing out zero candy bars. You know, the candy bar, the zero?
Oh.
She passed out.
I remember you talking about that.
She passed out zero candy bars to everyone who works in Health and Human Services in the state of Georgia as a totemic representation of the fact that she wanted zero people on welfare.
Just cruel.
Now, that's, yeah, really now that's cruel. Not because she wants a better economy that will provide a living wage for everybody. She just disagrees with the idea that we the people should help anybody who is in need of help. And that is I think a picture perfect manifestation of the brutality of the right wing in this country.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Bob,
yeah, they...
Cassie, yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No.
I think that you do a huge service for this among the Horn audience every time you talk about how your kids are uninsured and your grandchildren are uninsured. I think that even in the Horn audience, we don't realize, you know.
I'm a new Juanita. Do you have... Does Kathy have me mixed up with...
No. I don't think so.
No, it bothers.
Oh, okay. I don't have any children. However, I have had illnesses that certainly put me in a very bad financial disadvantage. So, and I have friends who rely on the system and who, you know, don't have enough food and don't have health care. And I certainly understand. And I was listening, Cassie, when you called the other night, and your story was so compelling. And
what
the fact
did
that
I
you...
say?
Huh?
What did I say?
Well, you were talking about going to college, and you were, you know, talking about your childhood, and it had been difficult, and that you were going to be the president. And I hope that's true. Because that we would need someone exactly like you, you know. So, you know, you must keep marching on.
Yes, I am.
That's very kind of you, Juanita. Ron in Raleigh just wrote in, and he said, remember, Bob, what Herman Cain said. If you're not rich and you don't have a job or you're hungry, blame yourself.
Oh, yeah.
And then Jack from Shreveport pointed out, he said, I recall a comment in an article, I believe from the UK, that said that the commenter could not believe that the U.S. would make people show up in line with food stamps at the grocery because in Europe they wouldn't put somebody through the humiliation of that. And I can't tell you the number of times that, for instance, over here, they ran Neil Bortz, and the number of times that he would inveigh and opine and fulminate because he had stood behind some woman in or some man in a grocery store with an EBT card. And he said, you know, the reason they're trying to keep us from knowing that these moochers are on food stamps. So they've given them a card so it'll just look like they're paying with real money that they actually earned, just like us working people do.
Yes.
Yeah, this is a nation of shaming.
It is.
You know, in the last couple of years, phrases like slut shaming have entered.
Oh, yeah.
Have entered the vocabulary. Well, you know, we also do a lot of poverty shaming too, as I think Cassie ably points out.
Well, we're quite shallow, and I don't know if it's the effect of Hollywood, but we're very shallow in that we judge people by the way they look, and, you know, and how much money they have. I remember when 9/11 happened, and they was describing a woman that was dead, and they talked about her Calvin Klein pocketbook and her designer clothes as though, you know, she was somehow better than the others who died because she was wearing designer clothes. So, yeah, we are a very, very shallow, very shallow culture, very mean, and So I, you know.
Yeah, and by the way, I have to tell you, Juanita, you got some fan mail. You may have heard Jim earlier.
I'm waiting with anticipation about the recliner because I was. Is Jim the one with the recliner?
Yes, yes, yes.
Yes, I am waiting. I'm so interested in what's going to happen with him in the recliner. It was hilarious when he called and told that story.
Jim sent some fan mail in for you.
Okay.
He says, greetings to Juanita, Beckley caller, well-spoken and on point. And I echo his words. And let me just say, Juanita, that you may not have been among the Horn family quite long enough to have experienced this little phenomenon, but there's a wonderful thing that happens with people from around the country who aren't, who don't have necessarily have Appalachian roots, and that is that they call in, or they often email to say, I have never heard radio like this before.
That's true.
And they say, you know, to hear people with an Appalachian or a Southern background,
yes,
talk progressive politics actually gives me hope.
Oh, yeah. When I heard you on Mike Malloy, I thought, oh, no, from Bixby, Virginia. I thought, wow, you know. So, yeah, it's wonderful. And so I'm going to try to get some of my other friends hooked so they can tune in.
Oh, the more the merrier in the family, Juanita.
Okay.
And just a couple of things. This is one of those shows where you look up and you say, where did 3 hours go?
Oh, I know. And I didn't mean to talk this long because I know you probably have other callers who want to get through, and I apologize for that.
Oh, no worries. No worries at all. Let me do one more thing here. Let me bring another line on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Tim from L.A. What's happening, brother?
Happy New Year's in Japanese. I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing just great. This is a wonderful evening.
Oh, yeah, it's awesome. I try to use the Skype, but my neighbor's dog was working, so I set up in front of my car.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Well, the reason why I'm calling is because there was a lot of great topics that were discussing either on Skype or in Horn. And one topic they brought up was, the Constitution in Japan that Truman wrote up. Well, I've been reading lately that the LDP, the Liberal Democratic Party in Japan, which is not a Liberal Democratic Party, but a right-wing group, is considering rewriting the Constitution that Truman wrote up. And I was wondering, why are they doing that for? Then I look back and I see what was happening in Japan, for example, the crimes that been happening, the rapes and whatnot.
Their population is going down too.
Well, yeah, the population is going down too because they said prior to 311, the end of the Japanese population, if they don't continue to, I guess, if they procreate, was going to go to, actually, the last Japanese born purebred is going to be in 3014, about 1,000 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
So now the LDP is saying, we should bring back our culture, bring back our, who we are as Japanese, and that's code word for going back to pre-World War II Japan, and probably, feudal Japan. And I'm like, oh my God. So I'm starting to kind of worry there because all the stuff that's happening here in the U.S., everything that we're, that we do, through free trade and whatnot, like the ASEAN and all the different free trade and with Japan, they're getting disgusted.
Well, and let me guess, one of the reasons behind rewriting the Japanese Constitution, Tim, is to remilitarize. Might that be it?
Yeah. Yes, it is. Especially, well, they're saying because of North Korea, but that may or may not be true, but I think that they want their autonomy. They also want to build up, the Japanese pride. And the way they do that is...
We've been to that movie before, haven't we?
Yeah. Yeah, we have. And what happened when they did it, back before World War II? They put my people in concentration camps.
Yeah.
Because that was like the goddamn enemy. But that's what's happening with Japan. And they have this great excuse that the corporation in America destroyed Japan on March 11, 2011, last year. They nuked Japan again. They did it twice before, on August 6th and August 9th, 1945. And they did it again on March 11, 2011. And nationalism, I think, is going to start bubbling up again. And the hardcore right wingers are talking about having the same caste system they had during the Tokugawa period, where the warrior classes were on the top rung, then the farmers, then the commoners, the artisans, and the business people were on the bottom. They treated them like crap. And it's going to cause a lot of trouble. Why? Because when they start doing all this WTO, NAFTA caps, and all that other garbage,
And now that Russia, China, and a bunch of other countries are not importing, you know, Japanese products into their country, and, you know, there's a very strict restriction because of the radioactive waste on their vehicles, on their food, you know, like fish, and all that other good stuff, they're going to have, they're going to revolt. And again, I see Japan doing the Russo-Sino thing again in order to survive, and the U.S. may step in again. I'd probably put my family or my next generation in concentration camps again.
Oh, Jesus, I hope not. I hope not. We've got too many friends in Japan to even contemplate a horror like that, Tim. Listen, everybody, we are right up against it. Juanita, thank you very much for your participation
this
evening.
And thank you so much for your wonderful show and your audience.
Thank you. And thank you, Tim.
Thank you. And Juanita, you're awesome. I love you all.
Well, I think she hung up, but I hope she heard that.
And I love the people in the Skype chat, room. I love you all, people.
And I know it goes both ways. Thanks, Tim. Have a happy new year. Of course, you're about 3 hours away from it. Or, I mean, you're about 6 hours away from it. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're still...
Love you, Timmy.
Thank you.
Yeah, Tim.
Yeah, I love you all.
We can't do this without you, Tim.
All right, Tim.
I love you, Tim.
I love you, too.
Well, people will be looking for you in the chat. And
We can't do it without Dunk.
Okay, we'll carry on after this. Let Bob close the show.
Right, and I was going to say, I'm not sure how things are shaking out, but I know I've got to get Ferg to a social event, and I'm not sure when I will be back from that.
10 p.m. to 1 a.m. suckers.
Yeah, watch your mouth. Yeah, no, he says it's over. It's over at 1. I think we'll be getting in the car sometime shortly before then. But you know, y'all keep it going if you want to, and I'll check in after, you know, whenever I get back after midnight and see if it's still going on. Hell, we can take this live some more. But I want to thank you all in the chat room. It has been a lot of fun, and in the Horns Skype Malloy extended chat. I think this is a blast, and I don't know how we can pull it off, but I've had a couple of emails saying, you know, Bob, this needs to happen more often. So maybe after I'm gone, talk amongst yourselves, and I'll try not to let my ears burn, okay? Thanks, everybody. Thanks, everybody in the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Happy New Year's to you all, and I'm going to wrap things up now.
All right, be safe.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, y'all.
New Year. Happy New Year,
everybody.
Happy New Year.
Thank you very much, Bob.
Absolutely. My pleasure. I'm gonna ring off there now and just close this out for the moment. Thanks, everybody. A special big thank you to Dano, who wrapped up fundraising for the year with a big contribution that put us over the top and answered Darlene's challenge. Thank you to everybody who made all of that happen this evening. It is, in fact, how we keep this going. Ferg, you want to say Happy New Year?
Happy New Year to the Horn family, and Happy New Year to you all as well out there from us to you.
Yeah, everybody is the Horn family. So,
well, my bad.
Yeah, okay. Jim asked me to ask you all to remember Secretary of State Clinton, who is in rather grave circumstances with a blood clot behind her ear, between her ear and her skull. I'm sure that Charles Krauthammer and... that life support system for a haircut, Sean Hannity, can probably find some way to make sport of that. I think they would probably try to suck the blood out of her corpse if she were to pass away. They're just that nasty. Happy New Year to you all. Thanks. Special thanks this evening to Sparky for making this whole thing work by moderating it. It came off as smoothly as one could ever even be close to hoping. Thanks ever so much. Thank you to you all for keeping all of this going. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff of the Horn, Sparky and Lottie and Betsy in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Happy New Year, Gene. It's already New Year's over there where you are. Thank you to John Fox, who worked New Year's. I hope you're getting a little bit of well-deserved rest now, John. Thanks for everything. Thanks to Ben Birch. the man who largely is responsible for liberal, progressive talks preservation on the internet. WhiteRoseSociety.org. And thanks always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AICACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Happy New Year's, everybody. No show tomorrow. Back on Wednesday.